Papa Roach. That's our brand new number one. That's it for us this week.
Now, if you miss any part of the chart, you can get caught up at thesideshowcountdown.com.
And you can listen to us no matter where you are with the free iHeartRadio app. Just go download it and look for us. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you.
The Side Show is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Now.
101.1 WRIF and 20RIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Pleasure to have you here. You know, I just broke one of the cardinal rules of broadcasting.
What? You do it all the time.
I do.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, you're not supposed to say everybody, because everyone is listening in their own car or
their
own home.
Individual.
So you're saying, hi, you. We're speaking right to you.
Hey, you.
Well, everybody, welcome.
This is the Ribs Phone-In Talk Show.
I'm Peter Werby, Jolene Jordan, my co-conspirator in thought crime. We haven't said that in a long time, have we?
We haven't.
No, we haven't. But, hey, I don't know, maybe it's the spring almost here. You can almost feel it today, right?
Almost.
Almost. Yeah.
Almost.
WRIF has kindly provided us, Jolene and I, and you alone, with the ability to make your voices heard on this incredible heritage rock and roll station.
Damn straight it is.
It is. Yeah. This goes back to the day. Remember, there used to be a guy.
It goes back all the way.
A guy that used to say, baby, and all that, right? Yeah. All the other great DJs here, including me and Jolene.
Hey, you know.
That's right.
I'm the baby. I'm only like in my 16th year here. You know, I'm the
That's
baby.
Right. That's right. Hey, if you want to call us, 313-298-WRIF, which is
313-298-9743.
If you'd like to email us, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We'll read some of them on the air. And go to our Facebook page, which it is just slammed with one subject, which we won't mention until I get to the subject.
Okay.
But it's facebook.com/nightcall. Facebook.com/nightcall. John Miller, waiting for your calls at 313-298-WRIF, and he will provide us with a podcast tomorrow at noon. So check that out. All right, so the big day tomorrow, tax day. Did you finish your taxes? You know, it's always saying morning.
Of course I did, Peter.
Did you? Well, I still haven't.
I'm just kidding.
It's not done?
No. Mine are so easy, you know.
Do they owe you money?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't matter. They're happy. I owe them money, and it's not done.
Yeah, they owe me.
But I don't do it. Come on, where's my tax attorney? Why do I have a tax attorney? It's so simple. It's a pal of mine.
You never know. They know more than you, Peter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
You know.
As usual, down at the Royal Oak Post Office. I don't know if this happens at any other regional post office around town, but at the Royal Oak Post Office, there are always some of our radio stations, WRF and our sister stations, are often down there.
Handing out donuts,
right? And if you're listening in some other part of the country or the world, it is like this, I don't know, sort of not really a festival, but the cars line up because they got to get this postmark by midnight tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
So there's this huge line, and then there's circus tents, you know, that the radio stations have there, and there's always protests.
It's really the strangest thing, isn't it?
It's not anywhere else.
I don't know. I'd be curious if it is.
Anybody else listening anywhere else in the country that
some things are really there are a lot of things that are just Detroit. Let's be real.
And then they always very frequently they'll have like these libertarian groups calling for no income tax whatsoever.
They'll be there.
And then there's also the Huntington Woods Peace, Citizenship, and Education Project.
They have their, I love how you stick that in.
They have their annual Tax Day Peace Rally.
Right on.
And they ask, where do you want your tax dollars to go? Military defense or education? Corporations and banks or public services? And they say you can join the Peace Action and the Huntington Woods, that's a mouthful, Peace, Citizenship, and Education Project outside the Royal Oak Post Office to stimulate conversation.
Excellent.
And plant seeds to those who are not thinking about where their tax dollars are being spent. That's going to be at 5 p.m. tomorrow in downtown Royal Oak, which is, what's, why can't I think of what street that? It must be 3rd. 3rd between Maine and Washington. Yeah, I think that's it. But anyway, you can find the post office there.
Just follow the line of cars.
And there's protests, but don't turn onto that street with your car. You could be there for 45 minutes yeah. or so, yeah. Protests have been scheduled nationwide. Bring signs and join us. No taxes for war. All are welcome to attend. Well, no taxes for war. That's sort of difficult.
Well, no, it's really not.
We pay for
war. Yeah, well, illegal wars, every kind of war.
Right.
We pay for it. Our tax dollars.
The people, and let me see, what is this? Nationalpriorities.org. Here's where your 2012, our 2012 taxes went. Of every dollar, 26 and a half cents goes to the military. I think that's...
So 30% basically.
Yeah. Well, then you add in veterans benefits and it does bring it up to 31%. And there's all sorts of other hidden
portions. Well, that's too small out of 26 to 31, but 6%. 5% is for veterans benefits. That's a bunch of BS right there.
20 cents of every dollar goes to health care, which must be Medicare and Medicaid. Interest on the federal debt is 13 cents of every dollar, and then kind of goes down. Science, 1 cent.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Energy and the environment, 2 cents. All right. So 10 and a half times more. Is that? I don't know. All right. I know. Don't do math. 26 and a half cents directly to the military. The military budget is pretty high.
It's outrageous. So yeah. The point being, you know, the priorities are a little upside down here.
Absolutely. So you could have an enormous war budget and not go to war. I mean, in other words, you could really make it a defense budget instead of a war budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the country could be protected. We could initiate a different kind of foreign policy and one that tried to initiate peace. That has never been done. I mean,
there are these peace talks, but they're really just all smoke and mirrors.
Absolutely.
You know.
Well, folks, some of you may know this, but here is the number one song in Britain.
Who are you speaking of, Peter?
Now, that's for real. Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, the song from... what's it called?
The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz. Yeah, I was thinking Alice in Wonderland. Where am I? Yeah. Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. And this has been thrust into number one. When I have an article here, it was number
three. We're talking about Margaret Thatcher.
This was occasioned on the passing of Margaret Thatcher, the former Prime Minister of England, who was the Prime Minister for 11 years, longer than any Prime Minister ever, I think, or at least in the 20th century for sure.
And I'm sure some people who are listening right now are thinking, what, Margaret Thatcher? What do you got against Margaret Thatcher?
She was so reviled. She's having a state funeral that has only been afforded previously to the Duke of Wellington and to Winston Churchill.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the story. The BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, on Friday rejected loud calls to ban the song Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead from its airwaves after the apparent success of a Facebook campaign to celebrate the death of Margaret Thatcher, the divisive, as they say, we say divisive. Former Prime Minister, by driving sales of the tune from The Wizard of Oz up on the British singles chart. And when this was printed, Ding Dong was number three, 12,000 copies only behind number one. Now, this is fairly incredible.
Because I think so many people maybe in this country are unaware of the hatred that many of the Brits had toward her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say by contrast, for instance, those of us who had an abiding dislike or even hatred of like George Bush and Dick Cheney would not be out in the street as the Brits were having celebration demonstrations.
Large ones.
Uh-huh. Large ones with huge signs saying, Maggie, 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 dead, dead, dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And Moms Mabley had this quote. She said, only talk good about the dead. She's dead. Good.
Oh, I love that one.
She was so reviled by other than the upper class that...
She hated the poor.
Let's
be real. She hated them. She had disdain for them. They didn't call her the Iron Lady for no reason.
Actually, here, this is in this statement. Well, I want to get to this one part. The soundtrack for The Wizard of Oz was written by E.Y. Harburg, who was called Yip. He was an American songwriter, and he wrote this Depression-era song, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? You ever hear that?
Yeah,
right? And he died in 1981. He had been blacklisted in the 1950s for his left-wing politics. Blacklisted meant that the people in entertainment could not work because they were accused of either being a communist, having been a communist,
or associating with communists.
Yeah. In other words, if this was the 1950s, Jolene and I would not have a job.
Well, we'd have a different job.
Yeah. And there's people out there thinking, where can I get this bank list? Where can I put Werby and Jordan on it? And
had to put up with this Werby for all these years.
But here, this, according to his Songwriters Hall of Fame, now, they called him Yip Harburg. Yip Harburg was this amazing songwriter besides doing The Wizard of Oz. But it said Harburg, who had been a member of several radical organizations but never officially joined the Communist Party, was named in a pamphlet called Red Channels. It was distributed to organizations involved in employing people in the entertainment industry, listed 150 people who had been involved in promoting left-wing causes like peace and racial justice.
And you got to remember, this was the
right-wingers, particularly like in the 50s. They weren't about any of that at all. And this, along with his affiliation with the Hollywood Democratic Committee, led to his blacklisting by the film industry, as well as the revocation of his passport. And didn't that happen to Charlie Chaplin? Didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah. So there were all these great directors, particularly, that were red-baited, as it was called, or accused of having...
of being commies.
Yeah. Get this, folks. I want to put this out to you. All of their politics were to the right. You'll have to speak for yourself, Jillian. Were to the right of mine.
All of
the people that were blacklisted. All the people that were.
Yes.
Yeah. They had politics to the right of mine. And you know what? They weren't real radical by today's standards. They wanted, they advocated things like, imagine this, back in the 1930s and 1940s, the integration of schools. The integration of sports.
No.
They were against wars.
I was going to, before you even said that, I was going to say radicalism is relative.
Yeah, sure. Asked what his father, Yip, might make of this controversy about Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, becoming the best-selling song this week in England to celebrate the death of Margaret Thatcher, the divisive, I love to say that, former prime minister. That's as good as saying Jaguar, as they also say. Asked what his father might make of the controversy, Mr. Harburg's son, Ernie Harburg, said on Friday that he would have been amused by it. Now, get this. Now, this kid, he's probably not a kid anymore. He probably could be 60s or something like that. Yip Harburg, this is his son speaking, lyricist of the Wizard of Oz film, would have been amused that Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead rose to the top of the charts when Margaret Thatcher died.
Yeah.
Those who sang the song Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead in the film, The Wizard of Oz, celebrated the end of tyranny at the hands of the Wicked Witch of the East. The celebration was not in the original book at all. So this was put in. See, these commies, they sneak this stuff in. They actually, imagine this, you can always tell a commie because they don't like tyranny. You're probably thinking, unless it's a commie tyranny. Yeah, you're right. You're right there. They have a bad history, too. I don't want to gloss over that. Yip said, humor is the antidote to tyranny. Show me a place without humor and I'll show you a disaster area. His son said, Yip believed tyranny is caused by the policies of austerity, imperialism, theocracy, and class supremacy, which deny most people human rights and economic freedom from poverty and want. A song, music, and lyrics allow singers and audience to feel the thought of the lyric, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, is a universal cry against the cruelty of tyranny and the protest against the ban on laughter at that cruelty. And according to his son, for the 99%, laughing and joy are required at the funeral of a tyrant. According to Yip, humor gives us hope in hard time. In Britain, Mrs. Thatcher's supporters are fuming at the taboo on speaking ill of the dead being flouted.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
No surprise at all.
So if you want to check it out, just Google Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. Like that.
And it's right up there.
Yeah, all right. If you have any thought, Morrissey is. He fronted the Smiths.
Oh, of course.
Smiths.
Yeah, and he's been touring. Yeah. Although I think he canceled some of his dates. He was ill or something, but he has been touring.
Yeah. He says, Thatcher is remembered as the Iron Lady only because she possessed completely negative traits such as persistent stubbornness and a determined refusal to listen to others. Every move she made was charged by negativity. She destroyed the British manufacturing industry. She hated the miners. She hated the art. She hated the Irish freedom fighters and allowed them to die. She hated the English poor and did nothing at all to help them. She hated Greenpeace and environmental protectionists. She was the only European political leader who opposed the ban on the ivory trade.
Damn.
She had no wit, says Morrissey, and no warmth, and even her own cabinet booted her out, finally, which they did.
Strong words.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, says Morrissey, Thatcher was a terror without an atom of humanity. Wow. I mean, she was so reviled, so hated. Imagine that, somebody dying, and there are joyous demonstrations and parades in the street.
I also like the part where he said she hated feminists, even though it was largely due to the progression of the women's movement that the British people allowed themselves to accept a prime minister who could actually be a female.
Yeah. Margaret Thatcher called Nelson Mandela the hero of ending apartheid, a terrorist. She opposed sanctions against apartheid, which is really what brought the regime down. That and the armed resistance throughout southern Africa. And President Obama, always disappointing us, called her a great champion of freedom.
Wow.
Where? When? How?
Yeah, please tell us.
All right. Anybody got anything good to say about Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it was a bad week for guns. It depends on how you look at it. Apparently,
depends on what side you're on.
Well, it looks like they broke in the Senate. They broke a filibuster against bringing up this confiscation of all weapons. Oh, no. That's right. I'm sorry. It was universal background checks. But it wasn't quite universal anyway. Because...
Don't go freaking people out.
Yeah,
Peter.
No. Right. It was that guns that are sold on the internet and at gun shows, now the people that buy them will have to get background checks, just like you would if you went into a gun store. I don't understand what is so...
Crazy about that.
And if you want to sell one to a friend or a relative or loan it to them, that's okay. All right. You know.
Yeah.
Like the Lanza's mother, I guess. Or something. That's actually a terrible joke.
Well, we'll just move on from that.
We'll move on from that. Here's what's going on, though. Still, gun sales and ammunition sales are through the roof. Ammunition short supply, people and the government buying it up at a rapid clip. But I got to tell you, if I was an investing man, I would not invest in the arms industry. It's actually a saturated market. The number of gun owners...
I can only imagine, especially more than ever.
Yeah, it's not an expanding market in terms of people. It's an expanding market in terms of purchasing right now. But it's going to collapse because after a while, you can only have so much ammunition, and most people aren't going to use it up. If you're buying hundreds of rounds of ammunition...
They're just storing it.
Yeah, they're storing it. So when the... What is it? The jackbooted... Stormtroopers come to take their gun away, they're going to what? But the market's saturated. The number of gun owners is diminishing. And yet the clout that, for instance, the NRA has is amazing.
Oh, the power.
Wayne LaPierre of the NRA, the most visible face of it, a $1 million a year man, that's what he gets. And the NRA... financed greatly by the gun industry, who's a shill for that industry and has a vested interest in creating as much paranoia among its members and the general public as possible, because then they'll do what? They'll go out and buy lots of guns. Right. But here's what I meant by actually it was a bad week. And you know what? I think I said this. Yeah, I did. I said this last week. Unless you're really reading the news news sites any almost looking for this. You don't even see this stuff. And for one thing, it's deaths by guns has just become, I don't know, it's like saying there was...
It's like saying there was a car accident, Peter.
Yeah, a car accident, yeah. So let's see. This is Saturday. Two women were in stable condition on Saturday after being shot and wounded a day earlier by a community college student who opened fire at his school's satellite campus in a southwestern Virginia mall.
Murder-suicide in White Lake.
Yeah, we'll go. Yeah, okay, we can trade off like that.
Police piecing together what may have triggered an argument that led to a murder-suicide of a White Lake Township couple accused of gunning down his wife, then taking down his own life.
Yeah, you know what? The argument is, I hear it over and over again, you are only going to hurt the law-abiding citizen by making it more and more difficult to own a gun or to purchase it. Although, like I say, if you go into any gun store, it's the same deal. So there's not anything really on the table that it's going to make it particularly more difficult. But this law-abiding concept or this phrase, law-abiding citizen, mm-hmm. all these guys are law-abiding until... they get in an argument in White Lake, and then they shoot their wife, right? Or, and we don't know, like this, the community college student who shot two women. Did any of you even hear this, that there was a Friday shooting at the New River Community College in Virginia?
That was not flashing as a headline.
No. Sharita Williams recently broke up with her boyfriend, changed her phone number to avoid his alleged harassment, and took out a personal protection order against him, but that apparently wasn't enough to avoid his rage. This is here in Detroit. Williams, a 35-year-old mother of four, was believed to have died Tuesday in a fire that destroyed her workplace, a medical facility that was set ablaze by her ex-boyfriend, Myron Williams, who also worked at the building. And so he shot her and then set the place on fire.
I mean, there's more fish in the sea. Why do you got to go that far?
Right. A Florida couple accused of kidnapping their two young boys after losing custody last week and then fleeing to Cuba were brought back to the United States on Wednesday and arrested in Tampa. The parents,
this was a trip
Joshua Haken and Sharon Haken, were charged with kidnapping and other crimes and abduction of their boys. Courts had stripped the Hakens of custody on April 2nd. The next day, Mr. Haken went to the grandparents' home in Tampa, who had custody, tied up the grandmother, snatched the boys, met up with his wife, and drove to a nearby marina. The family hopped on a newly purchased 25-foot sailboat and headed off to Cuba. Here's the deal, though. The children were taken from the Hakens in Louisiana last year after the police found the couple acting strangely in a hotel in Slidell. The Hakens spoke of completing their ultimate journey and traveling across the country to Armageddon. A Slidell police statement said officers said they had found narcotics and weapons in the hotel rooms. Law-abiding citizens, right. In Inkster, nearly two dozen mourners held candles and bowed their heads at an Inkster park on an overcast Tuesday, remembering Cindy Bailey, a woman they described as kind and courageous.
This is just so sad.
Yeah. Reports of a garage fire Monday found the bodies of a man and a woman in what police say is a possible murder-suicide. Her husband, Tony Bailey, shot her and then shot himself. All right. I mean, there's the White Lake thing anymore.
And last week we talked about the mega church pastor, Rick Ward, and his son committed suicide. Turns out his son, he says even, got his gun illegally on the internet.
Unregistered, and he'd had a history of depression.
Yep. Yeah.
In Atlanta, a man who police said was in deep financial trouble called firefighters to his house in a suburb of Atlanta, then held him hostage for almost 4 hours until he died by gunfire in a shootout with police as they stormed the house. I mean, this just goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah, and there's more than this. There's more that we don't know about.
Yeah. How about this?
All over.
A youth baseball league in Illinois is raffling off an AR-15 military-style assault weapon to raise money for its kids.
Oh, that's nice. Isn't that sweet?
The Atwood Hammond Group partnered with the local armory for the raffle. It's been going gangbusters, Sharity Butcher. Wow. Her name is Butcher? Co-owner of the Atwood Armory? My phone has been ringing nonstop since 4:30 this morning. It's just been crazy. It's a good cause for the kids, and we're just trying to raise as much money as they can.
Sell some guns. What happened to cookies?
Well, I mean, here's the problem. Their fundraiser last year only raised $10.
So they thought the gun might
join in this if you
more punch, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. So here there was this Pew Center research. What is it? Pew Research Center for People in the Press. Who? Why own a gun? And now, in 1999, 26% of people said they owned a gun for home protection, 49% for hunting, 8% for target shooting, and like 4% just constitutional right, collect them, other like that. Now,
I think that number's grown, yeah.
Yeah. In February 2013, almost half the people say they have it for protection.
Yep.
And hunting has gone down significantly as well. Target and sport shooting has stayed about the same. The survey found that 60% of the public say the state should not be allowed to ignore federal laws, while 36% say that the state should be able to ignore federal gun laws. Wasn't that what kind of started the Civil War?
No, yeah. That little thing.
This
little,
is nice.
Little war.
You know, our pals in Peace Action of Michigan, they have this newsletter called Flash. Mm-hmm. And there was a poem that they reprinted. I actually saw this on Common Dreams, commondreams.org. And this was, remember how moved that President Obama was by the shooting in Newtown?
Yes.
And this by Bill Quigley, he says, remember all the children, Mr. President. Remember the 20 children who died in Newtown, Connecticut. Remember the 35 children who died in Gaza in 1 month from an Israeli bombardment. Remember the 168 children killed by U.S. drone attacks in Pakistan since 2008. Remember the 231 children killed in Afghanistan in the first 6 months of 2012. Remember the 400 other children in the U.S. under the age of 15 who die from gunshot wounds each year. Remember the 921 children killed by U.S. airstrikes against insurgents in Iraq. Remember the 1,770 U.S. children who die each year from child abuse and maltreatment. Remember the 16,000 children who die each day around the world from hunger. All these tragedies must end. Yeah. Hey,
Shiver.
I know, you want us to keep it light. Well, can't do it.
Yeah, you know, we're living in reality here.
Yeah, this is
this
yeah. We
okay.
I mean, you know,
sorry.
I love just the rock and roll riff plays. It kind of takes you away from it all.
And it'll be back.
I went to a great
this is important
rock concert last night. And
Bob Seger was here last night.
Oh yeah, I didn't go to that one though.
Yeah.
But I heard he was kick.
I heard his sound check. I was there for the sound check. It was
really.
Well,
I didn't know. They didn't tell me that.
I was up at the Palace doing a little pre broadcast.
Yeah.
And for our sister station here. And, okay, I snuck in there and kind of hid and caught a couple songs. Man, they were great.
You can do
tight.
It.
And those, you know, Bob, I want to be your background singer. I just want to say it right here. Anyway.
You could do it.
I know I could.
Yeah.
And they,
she's got the voice, folks.
They shuffled me out of there.
Did they?
So close. I go, but I work for the radio station. Like, you have no idea how much I play his music. Ah, man, carry on. But I caught two songs
really?
Before they caught me.
Doug Podell told me that he went both to the Thursday show and was going to the Saturday show.
Yeah.
And he said, I didn't even know that. I'm so out of it. The Joe Walsh opened.
Yes, he did.
And Doug said he was great.
Killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did. What a show.
Who got to see that, lucky on you.
And so how many people fit in the palace, do you know, approximately?
I'm not good with
20,000?
Probably.
Yeah. I was at PJ's Lager House last night. This little venue on Michigan Avenue.
Which is how many? 200 people, maybe.
I don't know, 50.
Okay.
With a kick set from the Luddites, who have a brand new album.
They've been around Detroit a long
20
time.
20 years, yeah. Yeah, 10-piece band, 4-piece horn section.
Who has that anymore?
Yeah.
Unless you're, you know, big, like Bob Seger has.
Oh, they're good.
At least a 10-piece
band. This show was just so absolutely
amazing.
Oh, and
the Black Crow has played tonight.
Did they?
Probably just getting out of that show or soon. Yeah,
all right. One of the things that some people on the right are really nuts about is gold. Right?
Yeah, well, we've been hearing all these gold ads.
I think we could take a break.
Okay, and then we'll continue.
We'll talk
all
about
right.
gold. Gold!
Okay.
When we come back. And there are some open lines if you'd like to talk about anything we've mentioned. Margaret Thatcher, Ding Dong, The Witch is Dead, that song from The Wizard of Oz.
Are we being too harsh?
Number one in, well, I haven't said anything.
I'm saying, do people think we're too harsh?
Well, I was just reading. I wasn't making any opinion.
Oh,
you did.
No.
You said she hated the poor. I quoted Morrissey as saying she hated the poor.
But she did.
She did.
She had disdain she for the
woman.
Poor. Awful.
Yeah, awful woman.
There you
awful.
Go. Thank you.
And also, Bam Bam, going to shoot you down. But I don't know. I don't know what it all says. It's nothing much is going to change with all this legislation. You know, really, in fact, I got about 30 seconds. I may have said this. Essentially, what is happening, since about 90% of Americans support background checks, they are really trying to use this to push the Republicans into a corner. And you know what I say? Good.
Okay.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
My mum always says hard work never hurt anybody. Good advice as usual. So we worked very hard to make Geico.com very easy. Say you want to report a claim and follow its progress. You can do it all online at Geico.com. Not to mention perhaps saving a tidy sum of money on your car insurance. All it takes is a few clicks. So visit Geico.com today. Oh, and Mum, if you're listening, yes, I did wash behind my ears this morning.
Wow.
Duh.
Introducing the new Cool Ranch Doritos Locos Tacos from Taco Bell. With a shell made of Cool Ranch Doritos chips.
Wow.
Some call it the most amazing thing ever.
Duh.
Some think it's the most obvious. But one thing's for sure. Duh. It's wow. The new Cool Ranch Doritos Locos Tacos are here. Click to find the nearest Taco Bell location. Live mas. At participating locations, Doritos and Cool Ranch are trademarks of Frito-Lay North America, Inc. 2013.
Jim Twitchell's a senior master technician at Ford, and once he starts talking brakes, there's no stopping him.
Brakes are the most important system on your car as far as I'm concerned. And when we do an inspection, we check the pads and shoes for thicknesses, we check the rotors and drums.
Get Motorcraft Brake Service with up to $50 in mail-in rebates when you use the Ford Service credit card. Click on the banner ad now. Taxes extra. Rebate by check subject to credit approval. Pads or shoes on most cars and light trucks. One axle. Excludes machining, rotors, or drums. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details through 531-13.
Yes. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. I was going to read some email. It suddenly disappeared, and suddenly there's a young woman in a bikini staring at me. Oh,
it's the Riff homepage.
It's the Riff homepage, yeah.
The Rock Girl contest has begun again.
WRIF.com. Yeah, sort of.
That's also where you can get our podcast, yeah, by the way.
On or at Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Also, if you want to, I mentioned just vaguely how much anti-Thatcher stuff there is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/nightcall. Mm-hmm. It's over the top. Thank you, Debbie, for posting all of that.
Yes, thank you.
So I have no idea what I did here, although I may have. No, I don't know. But go ahead. Do you got that email up there?
Which one? The ding-dong one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It says, death is peace, so why the joy about Thatcher? Ding-dong, Bush and Cheney are still alive. There is some hope. We didn't say it.
That's cold.
That's from Winston.
Yeah, yeah. And also someone wrote in, I noticed before this disappeared, that that Chumbawamba has a song out as well. Chumbawamba that did, you know, I get knocked down.
And I get up
again. I'm never going to be. Yeah, yeah. They weren't fans of Maggie. And who was it? Was it the Specials that did Stand Down Maggie? That's kind of,
I don't know, Peter.
That's kind of
you
mild.
Got me on that one.
You don't know the Specials?
Well, I'm familiar.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. No. Well,
I don't know everything.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk about gold, but let's get some callers on the air. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Rob in Woodhaven. Rob, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How you doing?
We're good.
You know what? People sometimes don't like people that are aggressive, and when they're aggressive, they kind of take a lot of criticism because they walk outside the lines. My point being is that Margaret Thatcher was not royalty. She didn't win any decisive wars. The British really loved to decorate their war heroes and put them out front of everybody. She just did her job. She was in the best interest of the British people, and to hate her, I mean,
Wait. What gives you the idea she was acting in the best interest of the, you know, that's sort of a
thing.
Let me just say one thing. The idea that there is the American people or the British people is so vague a term, because she did fine. Actually, she didn't even do that fine. Everything that she tried to accomplish didn't really work out, and it really hurt the average person, the middle class and the working class and the poor, who she despised. She was born into a rather average home, but she became a course very wealthy being a politician, and she became a baroness, and so she probably thought she was royalty and looked down at her nose at the common people, including people like you and me, Rob.
Okay, well, I wasn't aware of that. I just, from what I've seen on TV, I guess I don't know enough about her, but being a politician, I mean, that holds some kind of weight, being a premier or a leader of a country.
Well, she also did win a battle against Argentina. In fact, she ordered the shelling of this ship. Was the Belago? Was that it? There was these islands called the Falkland Islands that is off the coast of Argentina, a bit of ways from Britain. And there's always been this dispute because, you know, the English took over these places way beyond their own geography, and like so many European countries did, and the U.S. for that matter. So there was this war took place, and she ordered the shelling of the ship that was actually retreating and killed hundreds of innocent. I don't know. Are you innocent ever if you're in the opposing army? But they were headed out. I mean, they were disengaging the battle, and she won this big battle against Argentina. Right? I mean, it wasn't a hell of a battle. All right. Rob, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/nightcall, and you'll see all this stuff. All right. Thank you for calling. All right. Gold. People have sought this glittery substance forever. I mean, it has inherent wealth, right? Inherent value.
Value.
Inherent value, right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well,
it's a rock.
No, it has right. That's true, Peter. It has been going up in value over the past
years. Incredibly, like 650%.
And all of those ads on television saying you need to invest in gold, invest in gold. We've been talking about this the whole time.
But you know who I think is really disgraceful? A lot of these liberal and left-wing talk show hosts, these are our colleagues, our pals.
I know.
Do the same thing. And, of course, it was a bubble, and it's starting now to
Well, you called a couple of them out on it, too.
I did. And they never answered.
I know.
Yeah, they answer every email I send. I said, why are you doing this? You're really eroding your what would be
credibility.
The, credibility. That is exactly the word. Here, this from the New York Times. Below the streets of Lower Manhattan in the vault of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the world's largest trove of gold, half a million bars, has lost about $75 billion of its value. In Fort Knox, Kentucky, at the United States Bullion Depository, the damage totals $50 billion. And in Pocatello, Idaho, the tiny golden treasure of John Norstog has dwindled, too. As well, a $29,000 investment that he made in 2011 is now worth about $17,000, pardon me, a loss of 42%. Now, here's what I think is interesting and important. Mr. Norstog, 67, says of his foray into gold, I thought if worse came to worse and the government brought down the world economy, I would still have something that was worth something. This is so sad.
It's so sad because this is what a lot of people have
said. And this is the result of this right-wing propaganda. Now, I'm not 100% sure, nor would I guarantee, that what we call the world economy is going to continue as it has. There is a lot of people that think that wealth generation has ended. In other words, the capacity to keep creating new wealth will go on endlessly. I wouldn't want to assure you of that. And there is so much interconnectedness of a financial system that is a house of cards. But the idea somehow, what are you going to do with gold? You can, if everything collapses, you can use them as doorstops, your gold bullion. In fact, a lot of people don't even have the gold. They have a gold certificate.
No, that's true.
So this is, but one of the places where you really see this, I mean, is on these right-wing talk shows where they have all this sort of millenarian fear, you know, that the millennium's going to come, mm-hmm. that the end is here, Armageddon and apocalypse. The millennium, the apocalypse, all those words, you know, like that. Gold, a store of wealth since time immemorial, has turned out to be a very bad investment of late. A mere 2 years after its price raced to a nominal high, gold is sinking fast. Its price has fallen 17% since late 2011. Wednesday was another bad day. It dropped $28. It would have been like 35, 40 years ago. It was selling, I think, for about $45 an ounce, and it was up to $1,558. And these guys started saying that gold was going to be worth $5,000 an ounce, right?
Yes.
And that's a bubble. I mean, this they compare it, or is it in here? No, it's somewhere else.
They compare it to the housing industry?
Well, no, more to these bubbles. Other bubbles. Like the housing industry or one of the first bubbles were when people were bidding on these tulip bulbs in Holland in the 17th century.
Really?
Yeah, and it,
that's
and it,
interesting.
And people just bid them up because, well, if they say that a tulip bulb is worth, I'm trying to think what they are, a piece, say 50 cents, right?
Okay.
And somehow because of scarcity, they're not, they get bid up to a dollar, and someone says, wow, a dollar. And they kind of just magically, almost through sort of a financial hysteria, just become worth more and more. So suddenly a tulip bulb is selling for $10, and at some point someone says, you know, that's not worth it. It's just a tulip bulb. Or it's just a house.
Right.
So the idea that a financial system should be, or one would imagine, that it's based on totally material basis, mm-hmm. has all these sort of psychological aspects to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things, too, because although the system itself is out of the recession that Bush and Reaganomics caused, still, millions
Slightly.
Of people, well, it is for, no, the economy is, doesn't mean the people are.
Right.
That people are still nervous. So when, before 2006 hit, when the Bush recession hit, there were books out, like, or maybe even before that, called Dow Jones, which measures the value of the stock market. Dow Jones 30,000. They were thinking then it was like 13,000, so it was going to go up endless. And what is it? I mean, what are you buying? You're buying stocks. And normally you would think a stock is worth what you own, say, stock in Ford Motor. And you're going to say, what's going to be your dividend check? Except you're not even holding on to it for long enough to get that direct dividend check. You're using that just as something to sell. And they say, well, Ford Motor Company profits are going up, so it's going to be worth more. And then you sell it, and you can say, okay, I can sell it for a little more. And then it just expands and expands. And I'll tell you, I mean, the stock market now is over 14,000, headed up towards 15,000. That makes me very nervous.
It does?
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't think, oh, great, things are going good. Because for one thing,
it's kind of like air, yeah. You know?
And then, like but we shouldn't say it because someone will say, you know, that's right. And boom, it'll just all drop. So what went wrong is asked. The answer is that lies in what is right. Analysts say gold is losing its allure after an astonishing 650% rally from August 1999 to August 2011. Fast money hedge fund managers and ordinary savers alike flocked to gold, that haven of havens, when the world economy teetered on the brink in 2009. Now the worst of the Great Recession has passed, so as things look up for the economy, things go down for gold because people start thinking, well, wait a minute. I can shift my funds here. I can buy a house, or you know, stuff like that. One other thing. But still, I mean, it all. You know, people say that gold is the one solid thing you can count on. A lot of money critics talk about the fact that we have what they call fiat money, F-I-A-T, not put out by the car manufacturer, but put out just by government direction. You want more money into the system the way we have been recently? If the Fed wants to pump more money into it because they control the money supply, you print it. And then they're going to say it's all going to be worthless because there's going to be all this inflation. Well, there hasn't been any inflation at all. And could there be? Sure, because capitalism is an absolutely insane system that is run by totally insane people. I mean, they seem very rational when you look at the money. Of course, when you look at those money channels, they got a lot of those guys look like total nuts, don't they?
They are nuts. Yeah. A little bit, woo-hoo.
Yeah, but all these big CEOs, and I mean, think about all the people. For instance, all those Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns and all that. If you would have seen them few months before they went bankrupt, they would have seen the most credible people in the world. They were self-assured. They were the, what is the word? What are they? The what of Wall Street? Is it the princes of Wall Street or something like that? You know, in other words, they were the 1% are poor to them. You know, they are in the 0.1%.
Yeah.
They don't even hobnob with the
1%. The very highest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
the 1% kind of were peasants.
All right. So, but gold has it is sort of universal. The wizards of Wall Street. Thank you, John Miller, who's getting your calls
at
313-298-WRIF. There actually may be another phrase as well. The wizard just means the guys that are good at manipulating the market. But these are the kings of finance. And why should the pinnacle of an economy be finance? Guys that are using money to make money, that aren't making anything, that aren't creating anything, that aren't creating any jobs whatsoever. They are taking money and invest. I mean, and some of it goes through their hands, like literally in seconds. It is bought and traded. And you go, well, how can they make any money? They're making like half a cent on a share or something like that, or less. Well, you start adding that all up, and it makes a lot of money.
Adds up.
All right. So you have gold. It has this almost, I have to say, you might say then it does, in fact, have an intrinsic value because it is universally respected as a measure of value and of wealth. But still, it's just a pretty stone. Right?
Yeah.
And it has human assigned value.
It's really a mineral, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Mineral?
Isn't it?
No, it's a metal. Now that I think of it.
Not really stone, right. Yeah.
All right. And then the idea that you have, the original idea is that precious metal had to back currency. So you could, and like even a dollar bill would say silver certificate. So if you had a, You could, up till, I don't know how many decades ago, if you had a dollar bill, you could go into a bank and say, hey, I want a silver dollar for this. And they give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And they had $5 gold pieces and $20 gold pieces. But also they had $100,000 bills. You ever seen those? Or,
no.
Yeah. And they had, $1,000 bills. And I think it was somebody, John Miller, what do we pay you for? What are the currencies? What are the largest U.S. currencies? But here, okay, let me get back to that. So the idea was that you had to have like a one-for-one value. So if you had a $10 bill, you had to have $10 in gold. The United States went off the gold standard under Richard Nixon, a Republican you may remember, and a lot of people say that's when everything went to hell. Now, I don't know if it did. But how about this? Bitcoin. You know what Bitcoins are? BITCOIN.
This is involves those two brothers that tried to sue Zuckerberg. I didn't know what that meant.
The Winklevoss twins, Cameron and Tyler, the 6'5", super handsome Olympic rowers, are also multimillionaires. So I started reading this. Never mind Facebook. Winklevoss twins rule in digital money. They're laying claim to a new title, Bitcoin Moguls.
We knew they'd come up with something else.
The Winklevosses have amassed...
Otherwise known as the Winklevi.
The Winklevi. Oh, yeah, right. Last summer, they appeared to be have the single largest portfolios of the digital money, whose wild gyrations have Silicon Valley and Wall Street talking. The twins, the first prominent figures in the largely autonomous Bitcoin world to publicly disclose a big stake, say they owned $1 million worth. So where does this get its worth? I don't understand this a bit.
I don't either.
So I went to Wikipedia. I'll just read you a couple lines of this. Bitcoin, BTC, as they're called, is an online commodity that is based on an open source peer-to-peer encryption protocol first described in 2009 by a pseudonymous developer or developers, Satoshi Nakamoto. Got it?
What?
I don't know.
Ever?
I don't know. Bitcoin creation and transfer is accomplished on an internet-based network and is not managed by any central authority. Anarchists of the world, hey? The creation of a new Bitcoin is automated and may be accomplished by servers called Bitcoin miners that confirm Bitcoin creation by adding codes to a decentralized log.
This is like just all jumbled to me.
Yeah, I have no idea. Okay, here. John Miller tells us the largest U.S. currency ever in 1934, $100,000 gold certificate. So this actually had gold in back of it. Also that year, $500, $1,000, $5,000, and $10,000 bill. Who's on the $10,000 bill?
I'll
give you one if you know.
I don't know.
I think it's Samuel P. Chase.
And I wasn't even going to try because you wouldn't give me one.
No.
You might buy me
one. Can you check that out? He's on one of those. All right, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Tom in Southfield. Tom, hey, it's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
We're good. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Can I pay you your next salary in bitcoins, would you?
Or how about gold?
Yeah, gold you'd take.
I wanted to talk about the hypocrisy of the Republican Party related to, and this has been bothering me for weeks, and this is an old story, but I wanted to bring it up again because of the talk about the gun control and Newtown and how Newtown has sort of spurred this on. But Republicans were so upset and so angry over four adults in Benghazi being killed that they wanted somebody's head to roll and that somebody screwed up there. But when you talk about the 20 kids in Newtown, there's nothing we can do. You know, that's just, those things happen.
Yeah.
You know, nothing, you know, there's no laws that we can put in place to prevent Newtown. But four adults that voluntarily decided to work in a dangerous area in Benghazi were killed, and they wanted heads to roll, and they wanted somebody to account for that. And I just think it's so hypocritical. And it just,
well, it sure was. And
I hadn't thought about it, putting those together.
Yeah,
interesting.
I don't think that the charge of the Republicans over Benghazi, I don't think that resonated with the American people at all. They didn't know what the hell they were talking about. You know, what's being covered up? And nothing was ever covered up.
No.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF on the screen here. John writes, ding, ding, ding. $10,000 bill is Salmon P. Chase, who was in the Lincoln administration.
I will not remember that.
Yeah.
Good to know now.
On $100,000 gold certificate, Woodrow Wilson.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about, are you ready for this? Homophobes. Those are people that are just really nervous about so many gay people being around.
I mean, they're having rights.
They're coming out in major league sports.
I heard a little thing about that.
Also, we're going to talk about the Michigan motorcycle helmet law change. All that when we come back and give us a call in the meantime.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Ever hear somebody say, we can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way? I mean, what kind of a choice is that? At GEICO.com, everything's easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance, easy to go paperless by automatically paying your bill online. Easy, easy, easy. So visit GEICO.com today. Of course, if you prefer the hard way, I guess you'll have to go someplace else. Sorry, I just don't get it.
Wow.
Duh.
Introducing the new Cool Ranch Doritos Locos Tacos from Taco Bell, with a shell made of Cool Ranch Doritos chips.
Wow.
Some call it the most amazing thing ever.
Duh.
Some think it's the most obvious, but one thing's for sure. Duh, it's wow. The new Cool Ranch Doritos Locos Tacos are here. Click to find the nearest Taco Bell location. Live Mas. At participating locations, Doritos and Cool Ranch are trademarks of Frito-Lay North America, Inc., 2013.
WRIF presents the Made in America Roadshow, now through Sunday, at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi. Over 150 American companies in a unique shopping environment, with WRIF on hand throughout the weekend. Learn more at WRIF.com. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. The 2013 Riff Rock Girl Search continues. Cast your vote for the Exotic 8 right now at WRIF.com. You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Well,
that's right now. We're back.
Al, you messed up. It's okay. We got another hour. I'd like to invite you to take part in it. 313-298-WRI. We've been talking about everything under the sun, from guns to Margaret Thatcher, the song Ding Dong, The Witch is Dead, number one in England, and it's part of a campaign launched by people that despise the Iron Lady. There were major demonstrations of celebration out in public against Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, against her. Yeah, singing that song. Talking about gold
Talking about gold. Well, yeah. So you say I was calling it a stone?
You were calling it a stone.
What's it? We got an email?
I called it a mineral.
Yeah.
Okay, here it goes. First of all, this is from Drake, who wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Everything is cyclic. Life, the stock market, land, war, people's mindsets. It's cyclic in nature, but you just can't turn it in a line where it's never the same. You can't.
It's getting pretty heavy.
You can turn it into an oval and keep expanding the cycle with ideas and information. That was deep.
Wow, dude.
Do we wish it was true? No. Do we wish it would change? Yes. Then he said, P.S., gold is a metal, a mineral is a crystal structure, and a stone is just solid and brittle. I'm taking chemistry right now. Thanks, Drake.
Well, I did say that gold was a metal when we were talking about...
You said it was.
I know, but I mean, where do you get it?
45 minutes.
You get it out of the ground. This one is from Brian. Brian's in Windsor. Thanks for making our show international. We have people listening all over the world, don't we, as well?
We sure
because
do.
Now we're just, what, 8 miles south. Imagine that, folks. Who isn't in the Detroit area that when I say Canada is to the south of us, you're going, doesn't he mean the north? No, there are neighbors to the south.
Part of Canada.
Check your map. Anyway, Brian from Windsor writes, I've heard the top two arguments from gun advocates in America against possible new laws for gun control, and they can both be shredded with little logic. A little logic, rather. They say nothing could change because criminals won't follow the law, but with that type of reasoning, why have any laws at all for anything? Because some people won't follow them. They also love to bring up automobile deaths as well. But you not only have to register your car, but you also have to insure it to legally operate it. And a number of people have been calling it, saying that gun owners should have insurance, that one of the requirements of owning a gun would be,
So say you have insurance on a gun, and what do you mean? You
have say your kid takes him into a school and kills 20 children and 6 educators.
Oh.
Then the insurance company would have to make these payouts based on the insurance claims.
Ooh, I wonder how the gun owners feel about that.
Oh, no, they're like out of their minds for you. Well, their argument is that it's cars aren't guaranteed in the Constitution.
Oh, please.
All right, gays in sports. Hate to break some bubbles, folks, but growing expectations in recent weeks that a gay male athlete in one of the 4 major professional sports leagues in the United States will soon come out publicly for the first time. Now,
why is this such a big news story?
Well, no.
Why does it have to be?
Could you imagine one guy? One gay guy is going to be, you know, like the guy to come out. It's insane.
Right, because what you're saying is there's definitely
probably
more than one.
Yeah,
come
and
on.
there's been gay sports figures in the past. I mean, going back into the 1970s.
I mean, we're not just talking Martina Navratilova here, okay?
She's gay?
No, God.
But here, you know, let's take our hats off. Let's take our baseball caps off to the leagues that have begun to explore ways to accommodate and respond to such landmark announcements. The National Hockey League, probably the last of the leagues of the different four big sports you'd think would be down with this, and its players announced Thursday what appeared to be the most comprehensive measure by major men's leagues in support of gay athletes, the NHL. The National Football League is working with gay advocacy groups to smooth the way for acceptance and to discuss how to prepare for the moment when one of its players publicly discusses his homosexuality.
God, it makes me so sad that it has to be.
I'm looking forward to the day when nobody even bats an eyelash.
Yeah.
The NFL player Brendan, I don't know this guy, Ian Badejo, probably, has Pendejo? No, that's not it.
Keep going.
Okay. Has been something of an unofficial spokesman for the acceptance of gay players. The NHL said it had formed a partnership with the You Can Play Project, an advocacy group pledging to fighting homophobia in sports, to plan training and counseling on gay issues for its teams and players. That Rutgers coach that got bounced just recently that was hitting his players and throwing basketballs at him.
See, I didn't hear about
and
this.
And using gay slurs against him
really?
As well.
Really? I missed that.
Other leagues, the NFL, the Major League Soccer, the NBA, and Major League Baseball have policies that prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, and various officials have spoken in support of gay athletes. The NBA recently sent a memo to teams reminding them that interviews with players entering the NBA draft should not include questions about religion, race, and sexual orientation. Remember, there was a some South American player with a probably from Venezuela, but he had, you know, they wear those anti-glare black stripes,
yeah.
And he had an anti-gay slur.
Oh, I do
in Spanish,
yeah.
And he got fined like $50,000. He kept saying, "Well, I don't understand. What did I? You know, what did
it's
I say?"
So ingrained in their
well,
thinking,
his.
You know, his. Well, yeah. A lot of people, sadly.
The NHL. You know, they're used to.
I'm surprised by this. I'm really proud of you. I'm proud of the NHL for.
Me too. You know, these are all the leagues have had major expansion in terms of the addition of teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because like the National Hockey League only used to have 6 teams.
Okay.
So when they would have the Stanley Cup playoffs, they have a team in Iowa? No.
Hell no.
No.
they have a, what, I don't know what they call it.
They do it on straw. They play with a tennis ball and,
No!
Anyway, so the NHL, so you had six teams. You had only six teams.
Where do you think I was born in a barn, Peter?
I don't know. I used to be able to name them. Let me see. Detroit, Chicago, Boston, New York, Philadelphia.
You're going to name all of them?
Oh, no, Toronto. No, not one of them isn't there. Montreal and Toronto. There's only six.
That was it. Okay.
All right. So the fourth place team, the first four teams would be in the semifinals.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
You're not interested in this. Yeah.
Keep
going. So I don't know. I wonder.
I'm trying.
I should go back and look. John Miller, did the fourth place team in the NHL ever win the...
This is why we're not sports talk show hosts.
You know why I'm interested in this, though?
Why?
I'm in these semifinals tomorrow.
Handball?
For my handball, yeah. And the reason that I'm at work...
This is strictly selfish?
Yeah. So there's four teams in my division.
Okay.
And we're in last place.
Yeah?
Yeah, but we're going to be in the playoffs.
Well.
We're in the semifinals.
Good luck.
So this could be the Cinderella underdog success of the handball
league.
Are we on the air?
Luck.
Oh, I'm sorry. We are.
Just so much luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your handball.
So.
Never known anyone, first of all, in my life who played handball.
Really?
But now I know three people. You.
Yeah.
My lawyer.
Right. Who's my teammate?
And my insurance person. Well, I kind
of
know him.
Oh, yeah. Who's a friend of your lawyer's and mine. Yeah. Yeah. So, Bob, if you're listening, come on. We got to give him give the other fellow hell.
For that stuff. Right. My lawyer, told me that he actually lives for it, to play handball. And I kind of believe you do, too. You got a little addiction going on.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a good addiction.
It is. All right. Here, one of these things that there's a concern of people is, what role does the state have in protecting us? And a lot. I mean, it has...
On many different levels.
Many different levels. And one of them was that people in Michigan, motorcycle riders, were required to wear helmets. But
No longer.
Along with 29 other states, now Michigan, the Republicans put this through.
And it is quite interesting. You're particularly fascinated by this. And I am as well.
Well, you know, I am not. But remember...
Are you going to talk about how much about accidents and
no,
money?
No, I'm going to talk about where I get all this information from. You know our friend, the Reuters photographer?
Sure do.
That's who sends it to me.
I know, but it is interesting.
Yeah.
That people who don't wear helmets and get into accidents pay, on average, $11,000 more.
Yeah.
Did you read
is that all? No, $20,000. They have to have at least $20,000 of the first party medical benefits coverage.
But they pay more their accidents for health care.
Oh, I mean,
the cost
the rest of it. Yeah.
Themselves.
Well, here, let's start from the beginning.
If they live.
A University of Michigan researcher estimates there would have been 26 fewer deaths and 49 fewer serious injuries in Michigan last year if all riders had worn helmets as previously required. Michigan joined 30 states, or 31st, and in allowing adult riders to go without a helmet, a move welcomed by supporters who said it would draw more motorcycle riders to Michigan and increase tourism revenue, which it hasn't. Some say early crash data shows changing the law was a mistake. The law, which went into effect April last year, the motorcyclists are required to buy additional insurance, at least $20,000 more. That's not what they have to pay, but they have to pay for $20,000 more. The Office of Highway Safety Planning's data shows that motorcycle fatalities went up 18% last year from 109 in 2011 to 129 in 2012.
That's significant.
And they found out that in that period last year, 34% of people wore helmets compared to 98% in the previous 3 years when it was the law. So it's still only 74% of people, 26% of people do not wear helmets.
And we see them, and every time the weather breaks, they've been on the road. It seems to be half and half what I see when
really?
I'm on the road.
Well, that maybe it's in, I don't know. Let's see, where is this? The researcher found that the fatality rate was nearly three times higher for those who didn't wear helmets last year than those who did. And but here, the Michigan Dads president of the Brain Injury Association of Michigan said the $20,000 insurance coverage riders are required to buy, quote, would probably buy you part of the day in the ER and intensive care and not much more.
Yeah.
So then who picks it up? He said treating a serious brain injury can cost more than $1 million throughout a patient's lifetime. They could end up on Medicaid, and then the cost gets pushed onto the taxpayer. So this is not exactly an individual choice. This is something that affects all of us.
Well, yeah, and now all the ads are starting to come out about, you know, look out for motorcyclists because the weather's getting better in the side. And I think we should advocate that.
The good people in Abate, who are big fans of the RIF here, who pushed for repealing those laws, and who want, they say that the problem is that people aren't aware enough of motorcycles. I had two motorcycle accidents in my life, which convinced me not to ride any longer.
Yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't even an intellectual decision. I was so nervous. Every time I'd see a car come near me, I would start, my hands would go towards the brakes. I would throttle down.
Yeah.
And, but both times it was drivers that had no awareness I was there. So Abate, I forgot what it is. I don't have it in front of me. What would it stand for? Awareness.
Remember.
Okay. John Miller, what does Abate stand for? Or some of our people that are listening
and emailing. Yeah, calling.
Right.
313-298-9743. Yeah, but I think we should advocate, you know, be careful because the bikes are coming. The weather is going to break.
Yeah, John Amici for the Orlando Magic in the NBA came out about 6 or 7 years ago after he retired.
Oh, well, he had to wait.
Yeah.
He felt he had to wait.
Felt he did, right. This from John is busy in there, but give him a call. It'll make him busier. 313-298-WRIF.
Now, you know one thing I wanted to bring up that we haven't brought up at all? Maybe part of the reason is that we don't play that type of music at this radio station, but Jay-Z and Beyonce spent their honeymoon in Cuba.
Cuba City.
Did you see all of that?
Yeah, so the Republicans are going after him.
They're going nuts. And I was just curious, as a member of the media, I can travel to Cuba, both of us. You have 3 times now,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And now, what was it that made it so that they could go there? Are they members of the media?
No, they actually could very well be in violation of the law. I don't know why the name of the law escapes my brain right now, but it's against the law for Americans to travel to Cuba and spend money. Abate is American Bikers Against Totalitarian Enactments? Really?
All right.
Come on. You're making that up, John, aren't you?
I don't think he's making it up, Peter.
That's what Abate stands for?
I don't know.
Wait a minute. This is American Bakers Against Totalitarian Enactments.
Anyway, I was just curious how you thought and how they got there and that whole thing.
Well, yeah. So they could actually be in trouble.
Really?
Yeah. And I know these guys are listening, so I should probably watch myself. But well, the last time I came back from Cuba, a guy started giving me a hard time, said I didn't qualify. And I said, you know what?
You're a member of the media.
I'm a member of the media. I've written articles that have been published in national magazines about my travel. I talk about it on my radio show.
Yes.
I've done interviews on it, about it. I have been interviewed on several stations. And the last thing this customs guy said, it's American Bikers Advocating Training and Education.
Thank you.
Or maybe he's just guessing.
Peter.
Anyway.
He's not guessing.
Okay. But the last thing the customs guy said to me, you'll hear from the State Department. And
over here in Canada?
No, in coming back into the U.S.
From Canada?
Yeah, from Canada. Yeah. I've been to Cuba. He said, where you been? I've been to Cuba. But you've been to Cuba. You can't go to Cuba. And I said, yeah. I'm the media. Here's
my
card.
Did they pull you in?
Yeah.
To immigration and had a little chat with you?
Chat. A 3-hour chat.
Did they really?
Where we screamed at each other.
You did?
Yeah.
Well,
I really lost. I totally lost my Tai Chi cool.
And that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. Well, I'd left Havana at 6 a.m. and this was 11:30 p.m.
You kind of wanted just to be home.
Yeah. So I should have, I don't know. I just lost it.
Well, they probably.
I even apologized to the guy.
You did?
I did. I shouldn't have talked to you like that, but.
Yeah, he probably wrote that on your little file, Peter.
Yeah. Well, he said, you'll hear from the State Department. And I wouldn't, of course. I mean, I qualify.
You did not hear from the State Department.
No. But Beyonce and Jay-Z could very well. And you could be fine. I don't know. You know, it's pretty hard, actually, because they really don't have much of an adjudication process. That is to say, they say, okay, we're going to fine you $10,000 from having traveled to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I challenge that. And then they go, well,
No, they would probably just say, here, I've got it in my pocket. I mean, for crying out loud, she bought him a helicopter for his birthday.
Okay? Is that? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They have big coin. They bought her mother a house that has 16 bathrooms and 4 kitchens.
God, would my wife love that? 16 bathrooms.
To clean? I don't even like cleaning one.
No.
Anyway, I was just curious your thoughts on that because you've been there and we didn't even talk about that.
No,
I want to go with you.
Let's go.
I'm going for the mojitos. Let's be real.
God, you do enough mojitos here. I'm her designated driver when we have staff meetings off site.
And you're good at it.
Yeah, I am.
And get
I count your drinks.
Count my drinks and I say, I've had 10, leave me alone.
Yeah, we're having so much great fun. Let's talk a little.
What about the topless protesters? We didn't talk about that. We love topless protesters.
That was just FYI.
Oh.
For you, but go ahead.
Well, you know, Putin.
Putin.
Okay, Putin was going to be.
Prez of Russia.
In Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Right?
Or in Germany, wasn't it?
In Amsterdam. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Amsterdam is where the gay rights activists waved pink and orange balloons and blasted out dance music to press home their protest. And also in Germany, they did the...
In Russia, though, they're passing laws, felony laws, that virtually make advocacy of gayness a crime, a felony crime.
So more topless protesters.
Yeah. For one thing, have you ever heard any gay person advocate it or try to recruit people? I mean, that's nonsense.
That is nonsense.
Yeah. There's enough gay people.
There's another
country.
There's
millions and millions and millions.
Peter, there's another country we'd be in trouble in.
Yeah.
How many
countries? Why, we're gay?
No, because we advocate.
Oh, because we advocate.
Yeah.
For that. Yeah, for their rights. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Strongly.
Strongly, indeed. Well, I mean, it's pretty radical, right, to demand equal protection under the law.
Oh.
That's a pretty radical phrase. Where the hell did that come from?
I mean, how do we get away with this?
Oh, yeah, it's the Constitution. Isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
A little bit.
Should we really go boring?
Oh, but why do you say things like that?
What
am I going to do with you?
Yeah. The budget that's coming up. And so,
well, this is not boring. It's important.
Yeah. Well, it can both be boring and important. I mean, it is kind of boring, but it is extraordinarily important. And
but it affects you, the listener, and your parents.
And one of the things that happens, and I said that last week, I believe, or at least I didn't, I should have, when President Obama says he's willing to negotiate with the Republicans reductions in Social Security, you would have thought that there would have been this spontaneous outpouring of...
Revolt?
Of people in the streets, that the AARP, the American Association of Retired People, would have called, all right, you know, he announces on Tuesday and Friday, we're having major demonstrations in every city in the United States. You're not doing this to the old people of our as we call them, our senior citizens, or, well, actually, I like the phrase, elders.
Okay.
Yeah, our elders. You're not doing that to our elders who have so little on average to begin with, and we're going to start cutting into them. They say, well, it's just, I forgot what the figure is for the average recipient. It's in the hundreds of dollars. You go, hey, hundreds of dollars. I got that in my front pocket.
They can barely make it.
They don't.
I know several elderly, many elderly people who are on Social Security, and I'm telling you, making it to the end of the month, like Peter, some choosing between...
Oh, I thought you meant me. I was just barely making it to the end of the month.
What I'm saying is, you know, you saw the person deciding whether they could pay for their meds or eat.
Yeah.
I mean, really, this is completely absurd in this, the richest country in the world. And now they want to take more from them?
Let me see. My friends were here a week ago Saturday. So remember I said that they had come in from Toronto. In fact, these are the guy who led the tours to Cuba. Mm-hmm. And he came to visit us from Toronto. And they came through Port Huron. And they stopped at, remember I said the slider place? White Castle. And he said there was a like person working was like 80 years old. And sometimes the elderly people like to get out.
They want to work.
Yeah, but very frequently people have to keep working at an advanced age and standing up like that all the time. So So we always talk about respect for elders, just like we talk about respect for our veterans, and then screw them on their benefits and their medical care and what have you.
And they do get screwed.
Anyway, President Obama's effort to control federal spending would require the largest cuts from the government's biggest programs, health care and the military.
The military part we're okay with.
Yeah, except it's a reduction of 0.7%, not even 1%. That's
too low.
Yeah. And, you know, this, I suppose this is all available, but it's pretty hard to wade through all of this because the president's proposed budget for the fiscal year beginning October 1st will be extensively rewritten in Congress, but it is designed to reduce the growth of federal health spending by $401 billion over 10 years. So that's about $40 billion a year. $401 billion is like half of the year's war budget if you add every bit of it in.
Yeah, and we're talking this over 10 years.
Yeah. Now, the budget would require $57 billion in higher payments by Medicare beneficiaries. So this is, again, the elderly.
They have to take care of their own.
Cut $306 billion in projected Medicare payments to health care providers. That may be good. And squeeze, I think that's a great verb here, $19 billion out of Medicaid, mm-hmm. the program for low-income people. So the problem is caused by the ultra-rich, and our elders and the poor are going to be the ones that are going to be required to pay for. Let's get a couple calls in here. We've been just yakking. Here is, do we want to even hear from him on this? He says, guys in his cab hit on him, but he doesn't think they are recruiting.
Just take it, Peter.
All right, Maurice.
Hello, Peter and Jelaine.
You're on the air. Are you one handsome guy? Is that why they hit on you?
Oh, you know what? I tell you what. Let Jelaine be the judge of that.
Have you seen Maurice?
You tell a guy one time, no. The same guy keep on telling you what you could do. I'm going to tell you something. Conversation, and you bring it up again, two things going to happen. You're going to be walking. I'm going to put my foot somewhere. You won't like it.
So you don't appreciate being hit on that, but you should. Maurice. You know, I don't know what you look like. Maybe you should send us a picture. But I'm telling you, you should be flattered.
Yeah, and this is what women go through, by the way.
Oh yeah, another thing I want to talk about North Korea. You said that, Peter?
North Korea. All right. Yeah, we're here.
Best thing you do for North Korea, ignore them. Don't pay North Korea any attention, and they'll go away.
I think he's got a little bit of a point here, Peter.
You know what? That is true. That'd be very interesting if they just said, yeah, whatever.
Well, because they kind of do. They gloss it over.
This works real well.
Kerry's over there talking China, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. This, we were saying, and you were probably in on the discussion, Maurice, because you brought this up last week about North Korea. This works very well for the Pentagon plans to extend itself further into Asia. The United States, the only country that extends itself that far beyond its geography in every area of the world. With a South American command, an Africa command, I think it has an something or other. I don't think it's called Asia Command, but something like that. Has bases all around the world. None of this is necessary for the defense of the land in which we live. A lot of peace could be made with a lot of these countries, even with people that we think are whatever they say kid.
Impossible to make peace with.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right, Maurice. Thank you very much.
I'm also going to tell you, Maurice, that I have a lot of gay male friends, and they are very extremely picky about who they find attractive. So you just be flattered and don't be threatened, you know.
I got to say, I've been around a lot of gay people in my life. None of them have ever hit on me. Ever.
Really?
Really.
Peter.
Those are the
They're just hiding it.
What is it? Well, I mean, Yeah, they did.
Because you're a good-looking man. Your wife and I were just having this conversation a few hours ago.
I love these women. Would you like to move into our house?
Let's not get that crazy. I'm way too high maintenance for you, Peter.
No, but you sure can cook.
Yes, that I can do. I can throw down in the kitchen.
There's only a few people in the audience that will actually get that joke. All right. Here's Todd in Madison Heights. Todd, hey, it's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I think President Obama is just calling a bluff.
Partly, you're right.
Because I'm disabled. I'm not worried about it.
At all?
No.
Okay.
I think he's just pulling it because the Republicans aren't budging on anything.
Right.
And if he makes a huge cut, I think the Republicans are going to agree on most of the cuts that he wants and not go after the disabled.
I hope to hell not.
Yeah, here is what, for one thing, Social Security has nothing to do with the debt or the deficit. Social Security is in fine shape on all aspects of it, payments to the elderly. In fact, if nothing changes, it's solvent to like something like 2035. And just by simply lifting the cap off of the payroll tax and letting people pay their fair share, the people that make over $110,000, it would be completely solved. So this, I have no idea, other than the Republicans are entirely insane, why they would even want to tinker with this, other than they want to make it a...
They want to privatize it. Yeah. That's it.
They have never recovered from the New Deal, the Roosevelt era that ushered in all of these things like that we take for granted now, like Social Security, or in 1965 was Medicare. But here, let me just read you real quickly a little bit from this editorial in today's New York Times, now yesterday's. President Obama knew full well that many Democrats and liberals would be sharply critical of his decision to propose reducing the Social Security cost of living adjustment, one of the centerpieces of his 2014 budget. In fact, he was counting on it. He wanted to show that he was willing to antagonize his supporters, that's us, to get a budget compromise, putting Republicans on the spot to do the same, so that if he was willing to, like, give in on Social Security, they would be willing to give in on revenue. That is, to have the ultra-wealthy, their pals, the people that finance them and whose interests they solely act in terms of. I mean, the Democrats do, too, but the Democrats at least...
It's just a little smaller percentage.
Yeah, a little smaller percentage. So if this, as you're saying, Todd, and as this New York Times editorial says, putting the best face on it, okay, but it seems like a totally stupid political move on the part of President Obama, because the firestorm that came down around his willingness to even look at making cuts in Social Security has propelled particularly the left side of the party, or the left, what would you say, the left of the party, to increasingly wonder, who is this guy? Where is the Democratic Party commitment? Yeah, who's he stand for? Why is he always willing to compromise? The Republicans know how to do it. They don't compromise. No compromise. And what President Obama should do is go into these 2014 elections, because the Democrats are going to lose a lot, because they tend to in these off elections, and bring the idea that, as Jalene said, we are at this critical juncture in our history, and the economics of the ordinary person are we going to have these safety nets there for us? Are we going to have things like a minimum wage that becomes a living wage? Are we going to have universal health care? Are we going to stop making all these wars all over the world and frittering away our treasure and our lives and killing so many other people in other countries? And he should make this a campaign, a crusade, if you will, and that would bring people out. The way things are going now, people are going to say, what the hell, who cares, you know, what's the difference? You know, people get back into that. There's not a dime's worth of difference between the two major parties.
I think people just give up hope.
Yeah, right. The Republicans never, ever quit.
No.
They're like a dog on
a bone.
They can have that guy, what was that guy, George Romney, was it, or?
Mitt.
Mitt Romney. All right. Mitt Romney, and it's like they didn't even get defeated. They didn't even get defeated. You know, they,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah, they're right there. All right, we're going to take a break. I'll tell you about who we're going to have on at 1 a.m. Todd, thank you, and I sure hope you're right, because people like you deserve your family. You're part of our national fabric, and we take care of our own, as the Bruce Springsteen song goes.
That's all right. Right.
Talk to you. Oh, yeah, I got to press a button.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
If you're like me, you probably had to do something hard today. I mean, personally, I hate washing out socks. That's why we made Geico.com so exceedingly easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance. Easy to review and update your policy. Change of address. Just a few clicks and you're done. Visit Geico.com today, because life is hard enough. I mean, I don't even wear socks.
Jim Twitchell's a senior master technician at Ford, and once he starts talking brakes, there's no stopping him.
Brakes are the most important system on your car as far as I'm concerned. And when we do an inspection, we check the pads and shoes for thicknesses. We check the rotors and drums.
Get Motorcraft Brake Service with up to $50 in mail-in rebates when you use the Ford Service credit card. Click on the banner ad now. Taxes extra. Rebate by check subject to credit approval. Pads or shoes on most cars and light trucks. One axle. Excludes machining, rotors, or drums. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details through 531-13.
Ride specialists at Bright Power Sports will find a way to get you on a new ride. Bright is your home for new and pre-owned motorcycles, plus ATVs, snowmobiles, and watercraft. New owners and a new attitude. So get out of the house and get over to the Trade Up to Yamaha Sales event in Open House. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julie Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. At 1 a.m., I'll have an interview with Jeff Cohn. He is the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, fair.org. And he also is the co-founder of RootsAction.org, and he's got two things going with the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, really?
He wants to have it revoked from President Obama.
Really?
And he wants, and he and his group have nominated Bradley Manning, the imprisoned GI who exposed all these incredible State Department documents to WikiLeaks.
I get why he's doing both of those things. Yeah. I do, because President Obama has upped the drones in the Middle East, and he hasn't necessarily been an anti-war president. Let's just be real honest about that. We were also talking about the helmet laws in Michigan, where you no longer are required to wear a helmet if you're for motorcycle purposes, I'm talking about. Chris wrote in, most people are not aware of other cars on the roads. You take your own life in your hands when you get in the car, let alone a motorcycle.
And I'm sure he's correct. Yeah. And I'm sure it is absolutely getting worse with all these devices that people have.
Oh, I mean, the DVDs in the car and the...
Yeah. Did I mention this? That my dashboard now is so complicated, has so many buttons on it. I've had it for over a year, and I still, I mean, I just have to, wait a minute, is it, I'm kind of looking over, where is the, you know, like the Heat has like, I think at least eight buttons.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got, well, mine looks like a small space station.
Yeah.
Well, mine does.
Mine looks like a big...
kids got in the car and they were like, wow, man, it's like being on that ride at Disney World.
Here's one of the things we forgot to mention in the litany of gun deaths over the last week. A man shot himself in the infield at the NRA 500 in Texas. The NRA is sponsoring.
Can you go back? I'm sorry.
All right. Well, we were talking earlier about how that we just take it for granted how many gun deaths there are every year.
Yeah.
And so here, let me get this story up real quickly. A death of a man in the infield of Texas Motor Speedway on Saturday night during the Sprint Cup Series NRA 500 has been ruled a suicide from a gunshot to the head. Yeah. And firearms were prohibited by Texas law from being brought into the track by fans. Don't they know there's a Second Amendment? The NRA sponsorship of the race came under scrutiny when it was announced earlier this year after Michael Waltrip ran a Sandy Hook benefit car at the Daytona 500, encouraging fans to text to give to Newtown, Connecticut. It was the NRA's first Sprint Cup Series sponsorship. It sponsored the nationwide series race Atlanta Motor Speedway in September. So at an NRA-sponsored event,
the first one,
the guy shoots himself.
There's a gun incident. The first one.
Yeah. So what are they? Oh, well, you know, it could have happened anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is correct here.
It just goes together, though, Peter. That whole story just kind of works, doesn't it?
Venezuelan electoral officials say voters have narrowly elected Hugo Chavez's hand-picked successor as president in a razor-close special election on Sunday. Winner Nicolas Maduro campaigned on a promise to carry on Chavez's self-styled socialist revolution and defeated a two-time challenger who claimed the late president's regime has put Venezuela on the road to ruin. Maduro defeated Capriles by about 300,000 votes. So there you go. One of the things that the Bolivarian revolution has to do, it has to get a grip on crime in that country for sure. And there's been so much good that has been done, but
when there's that amount of poverty
Well, that's Venezuela, because of oil revenues and because of the willingness of Chavez and the Bolivarian Revolution to share it with the people rather than just the wealthy, that there's been the greatest reduction of poverty of any country in the hemisphere. Ours is growing. And
people wanted to talk badly about Chavez.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he wasn't the greatest man ever. Come on.
Here's Fred in Detroit. Fred, hey, it's Peter and Jalene. Welcome to the broadcast.
Oh, hi. You got me fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
Well.
No, I heard you mention the 2014 campaign coming up.
Sure.
And, first I want to commend the Brits on slamming Margaret Thatcher in light of the fact that middle class and working class whites over here kissed Reagan's butt when he died.
Yeah.
So I want to commend the Brits on that. But I heard a couple of things. Now, a couple of days ago, NPR reported on banks pulling that same old scam of taking money that they were supposed to sock away for their troubles and introducing it back on their books to make their profits seem so much better.
Who's this, Fred? Who's doing this?
Well, the major banks.
Oh,
the banks, okay.
Investment banks.
They don't call them banksters or nothing.
And then tonight, Bill Moyers, he slammed Obama for willing to do any sort of Social Security cuts, as well as corporations for forcing, sequestration by tax evasion.
Mm-hmm.
They're not paying their corporate taxes, and then everything that's needed by the American people has to be made up for on the backs of the elderly and veterans, you know, things of that nature.
Well, you know, the Tax Justice Network estimates that, talk about sequestering, that there are assets worth at least, and I'm saying this correctly, $21 trillion held in offshore havens. $21 trillion. If this stuff was taxed, there would be no need for any. We wouldn't be having any of this discussion whatsoever. In fact, I don't know if I have it right here. The richest Americans' net worth increased by $1.7 trillion. $1.7 trillion. And Obama's wanting to cut, I forgot what I said before, like $480 billion over 10 years? I mean, in other words, this figure that the richest Americans, their net worth jumped by $1.7 trillion. If you confiscated the amount of money that President Obama wants to reduce the deficit by, this would mean that the richest Americans' net worth would only jump by $1.2
trillion.
Aww. I mean, it's absolutely insane how much wealth is available and how it is just held by greedily by this teeny sliver of humanity in all the travail that we look, all the crime, you know, because it comes out of poverty, all of the, you know, the wrecked infrastructure of this country, the bad schools, the overcrowded schools, the horrible prisons, everything like that I'm a big enough commie. I am a big enough commie that I would take $1 trillion from these people and only leave them with a lousy $700 billion. Let me get another call. Thank you, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Appreciate it. Here's Jason in Windsor, also making our show international. Hey, Jason, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Can you turn your radio off? I mean, or all the way down? We've got to.
Actually, I should have no radio on at all.
Oh,
okay, go ahead, then. You're on the air.
No, I'm on a speakerphone because my earphone doesn't work on my cell phone. You guys touched on a thing about retirees.
Right.
Yes.
Pension plans, da-da-da-da,
Social Security, mainly.
Yeah. Why wouldn't we want to take care of all of us?
Exactly.
Well,
why wouldn't we want to have that absolute thing?
Well, it is actually...
It's a little thing called greed.
Yeah, there is a philosophy. One of the things that made us humans, literally, differentiated us from species that don't have the kind of sense of who we are and, you know, and who are our mothers and fathers and our brothers and sisters and members of our communal group, defined ourselves as human beings because we realized we had to look after each other. But at some point, some people figured out, hey, you know, most people are pretty passive. Most people are willing to follow. Most people get scared real easy if a tough guy says, you better stay back and let me have all this money or all this whatever I have, or
fear
you're
going to
get hurt. Yeah. And then there becomes this sort of mass psychology of submission. And so the most ruthless, the most power hungry, the people with the most distorted personalities wind up on top, and they only care about themselves. And the people below them, hey, what the hell? He made his. Why shouldn't we make ours? Although what they've done is so destroyed the sense of community that people almost become incapable of it. And then it turns out to be dog eat dog.
And it's a mass psychology of blind consent, I would say. What do you think?
I agree with what you said.
Okay.
I can't disagree with that. My biggest thing is that, yeah, community is lost. Somewhere down the religion plays in, doesn't matter which sect. But at the end of the day, why wouldn't you, growing up as a young child, and you look at anybody that retires that can have Social Security, union, non-union, doesn't matter what it is, why wouldn't we want to have a national pension plan from Canada to the U.S. to Mexico?
Sure.
So that we know when everybody retires, you're going to get this. This is what it is. Bang. We've all paid into it.
And also, you could have a North American minimum wage, or living wage, which would include, I mean, the three North American countries, people often, I'm sure you do, but people often don't realize that includes Mexico. So it's Mexico, United States, and Canada. So you would have, rather than auto workers in Mexico making, you know, like a third or less of what they make in Canada and the United States, even though they have unions, you know, auto unions down there, it would be the same. And where does the money come from? Well, when you start talking about the richest Americans have almost $2 trillion more increased wealth, that's all the money's there. And we're not looking, and we're talking, first off, about people that are working every day, and not looking for anything other than trying to do their job well. Whereas these financial manipulators, these people that have no sense of community other than their little 1%, are looting. Not first off the wealth that we produce, and secondly, then want to just throw us on the scrap heap once we're all used up, as the song goes. In fact, so I ought to bring that in.
Which one's that?
It's called All Used Up. It's on a Marie Mason album.
Okay.
All right, Jason, thank you very much again. Thanks for making our show international, although I know there's any number of you listening around the world. You can hear the podcast, by the way, at
Right around
noon today.
Tomorrow, you know. Debbie usually gets to it before I do.
Yes.
Love you, Debbie.
Here, this was an ad. You may, some of you may want to take a look at this. It was in the New York Times. New York's most anticipated residential building, ready for occupancy in 2013. a limited number of luxury condominium residences available from beginning at.
Wait, are we going to go? Are we going? Real estate hunting? What is it, Peter?
Take a guess. What they started.
Starting from?
Take a guess.
Okay. Let's see. Starting from.
This is a condominium. No.
$3 million.
What are you talking? Are you kidding?
That's
like the service. $17 million.
17.
This is the, so, and this apartment.
That's probably not even the rooftop.
You guys, oh no, no. Look, take a look at that photo. This looks like Blade Runner, if you remember that 80s movie.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and everybody, you know, when you're down on the street, there's all these air conditioners.
Whoa.
Because, you know, the climate has gotten so hot, everybody's air conditioned all the time, and so it's like almost raining on the street level. And look at that penthouse.
That is a tall building.
Yeah, it is. It's big. And what is it, 157? Isn't that what it says? Yeah, so it's probably 157th Avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the meantime, think about this. Remember those climate change deniers about that same mentality of the Holocaust deniers, actually?
Yeah.
According to this new, I don't know, should I even end the show on this? Millions of people will die of starvation across the world as agricultural yields are expected to tank and the price of food is expected to double by 2050.
And so anyone, I mean, if I had $17 million to lay down on a condo, yeah. I wouldn't do it. I would not do it. I would take that money and do it for good. But anyone who listens to this show knows both of us would do that.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not trying to say, hey, I'm better than these people, and you know, but
I think you are.
I've got a bigger heart than these people and a conscience.
Yeah.
If I had money, I would feed every poor child in Detroit.
In Detroit, if you had $17 million, you'd probably do it in the country.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that, but
I would do it.
Extreme temperatures, floods, and droughts brought on by climate change. The scientists warned in this year's U.S. National Climate Assessment is the culprit. Lead researchers of the study told the Observer newspaper that food insecurity risks turning parts of Africa into a permanent disaster area. And see, that's what my fear is that,
are you talking about Frankenfood or?
No, just that it's not going to be available.
Risks.
Food production will have to rise 60% by 2050 just to keep pace with the expected global population increase and changing demand. Climate change comes on top of that, so the annual production gains that we've come to expect will be taken away by climate change.
So the enormous amounts of starvation going on in the world is just going to get worse. That's bottom line. Great. Wonderful.
America's agricultural economy is set to undergo dramatic changes over the next three decades as warmer temperatures devastate crops, according to a U.S. government report. The draft U.S. National Climate Assessment report predicts that a gradual warming climate and unpredictable severe weather, such as drought, as the drought that last year spread across two-thirds of the continental United States, will have serious consequences for farmers.
And if you're still denying global warming, get with the program.
And, I can't remember the man's name. He's a filmmaker. He was on Bill Maher's show on Friday night. And he was talking about figure of 350, which is the parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And that the 350 is the limit that the atmosphere can take without dealing us this death blow. Mm. We're at 400 right now. But it can be changed. No more pipelines. No more oil pumping and production and processing and burning.
Yeah.
No
more coal. We just have to keep saying it.
And no more natural gas.
A lot of groups out there pushing for it. It's going to happen eventually, Peter. It has to.
I mean, when you think about this pipeline that spilled in Arkansas, remember these were the folks that were talking about for this Keystone XL project to bring the dirtiest imaginable
toxic
tar sand oil down through the entire country through a, quote, leak-proof pipe.
Yeah, that doesn't exist.
Tell the people in Arkansas, tell the people of what was that called, right around Michigan, remember? That was so undercovered.
Yeah, it really was.
Seemed like
only a small group of activists environmentalists were really in the know on that one.
Yep.
It made some press, but people didn't seem to be interested in it.
And the final thing that'll put you to sleep with good dreams. All 104 nuclear power reactors now in operation in the United States have a safety problem that cannot be fixed, and they should be replaced with newer technology. This, according to the former chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Shutting them all down at once, he said, is not practical, but he supports phasing them out rather than trying to extend their lives. This is the position of former chairman Gregory Jasko. It's not unusual in that anti-nuclear groups take the same stance, but it's highly unusual for our former head of the NRC bluntly criticize an industry whose safety he was in charge of. And he knows, everything's okay. Sure, for me too. Yeah,
I mean, this should be one of the biggest headlines. He's saying that these reactors are faulty.
So they asked him, why didn't you make this point when you were the chair?
Yeah, why not? Oh, because you were making so much coin?
He said, I didn't really come to this conclusion until recently.
Oh, boy.
He said, I was just thinking about the issues more. I had a little more time on my hands. and watching as the industry and the regulators and the whole nuclear safety community continues to try to figure out how to address these very, very difficult problems, which he says were made more evident by the 2011 Fukushima nuclear accident in Japan. Continuing to put Band-Aid on Band-Aid is not going to fix the problem. And he doesn't even mention nuclear waste and where the hell that's going to
right.
be. Pleasant dreams, folks. Actually, don't go to bed.
Sweet dreams at 2 o'clock. No, don't go to bed at all.
Yeah, just stay up for Drew and Mike in the morning.
We'll be back next week. Yeah. Thank you, John Miller.
All right, yeah, stay tuned. Got a couple of interesting interviews, and we'll talk again next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Ever hear somebody say we can do this the easy way or we can do it the hard way? I mean, what kind of a choice is that? At GEICO.com, everything's easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance. Easy to go paperless by automatically paying your bill online. Easy, easy, easy. So visit GEICO.com today. Of course, if you prefer the hard way, I guess you'll have to go someplace else. Sorry, I just don't get it.
Jim Twitchell's a senior master technician at Ford, and once he starts talking brakes, there's no stopping him.
Brakes are the most important system on your car as far as I'm concerned. And when we do an inspection, we check the pads and shoes for thicknesses. We check the rotors and drums.
Get Motorcraft Brake Service with up to $50 in mail-in rebates when you use the Ford Service credit card. Click on the banner ad now. Taxes extra. Rebate by check subject to credit approval. Pads or shoes on most cars and light trucks. One axle. Excludes machining, rotors, or drums. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details through 531-13.
Yes. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Save the date. Saturday, June 15th, Wolverine Harley Davidson's Harley Fest 2013 returns to Freedom Hill with 101 Go Riff.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, there are some people that I've had on this show repeatedly that I could call any week. And just look at the issues of the day, get a coherent and intelligent analysis of what is going on. One such person is an old friend of mine from Detroit, Jeff Cohen. He now is the director of the Park Center for Independent Media at Ithaca College and also an associate professor of journalism. But he also founded Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. It's fair.com. And we air the Counterspin show, which is a product of Fair, on some of these stations. And also, in fact, he co-founded RootsAction.org along with Norman Solomon, who also meets that definition. And you may remember Norman from the Institute for Public Accuracy, a frequent guest. For years, in fact, now I'm just reading from Jeff Cohen's column in CommonDreams.org. He was a political pundit on mainstream TV. He worked at CNN, at MSNBC, and even Fox News. He was, as he says, outnumbered, outshouted, red-baited, and finally terminated. Well, he's always welcome on the Peter Werby Show. We're reaching him at his office in Ithaca. Jeff, welcome back. Welcome home.
Great to be with you. It's always great to be on in Detroit, and I don't have to worry that you're going to outshout me or spit at me like happened on cable news.
Spit, actually, or?
Well, no, it gets so frothing that there's saliva in the air when the right wingers are yelling at you at close range. So it's not fun.
You know, seeing your column at CommonDreams.org actually made me kind of reverse what I wanted to talk about. Bradley Manning, who's being tried for all sorts of virtually treason for his release of secret files of the State Department, other parts of the American government to WikiLeaks, is being nominated for, pardon me, a Nobel Peace Prize. And also, you're advocating taking that prize away from Barack Obama. But, you know, I would like to talk just a little about the conference you were at and the importance of it this last weekend. It was tell us about it, will you?
Yes. Free Press is the main media reform group in the country. They organize this conference every year and a half for 2 years called the National Conference on Media Reform. Thousands of journalists and bloggers and activists show up. I was on a panel with Norman Solomon and Amy Goodman of Democracy Now and Marjorie Cohn and Sonali Kohatkar, who hosts her own radio show in LA. And we had a panel about militarism and how the media covers secret wars and drones and civil liberties during the so-called war on terror of the last 12 years. And the argument I made on that panel, and it was just one of the many panels at the National Conference of Media Reform in Denver, but our panel on war and journalism, I was making the point that there's a giant elephant in the room that in mainstream media is rarely discussed. And it's the problem of militarism. It's the problem where more than half of the federal discretionary budget goes to war and war preparation. It's a problem that Martin Luther King Jr. was focused on 45 years ago before he was assassinated, you know, and King, before he was killed, said that America is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. And he went on to say that a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. So we've had, and that was during the height of the Vietnam War when Martin Luther King talked about military spending. Well, if it was a problem in that day, it's a much bigger problem now, because military spending is even bigger as a percentage of what we spend things on at the federal level than it was at Martin Luther King's day. And the point I was making at the Media Reform Conference in Denver is that if you watch MSNBC and Fox News, which, by the way, I do each night, you'll hear all sorts, and the whole mainstream media, NPR, sure, PBS, you'll hear raging debates about subjects like the death penalty or gay marriage.
Gun control, or, yeah.
Yeah, gun control is the current one, minimum wage. But when the leadership of both political parties endorses a military intervention, as they usually do, then, you know, anyone in the mainstream media who goes out on the limb to say, you know, there's a giant elephant in the room, and it's called our knee-jerk instinct to intervene and to start wars and to send troops and to send missiles and to send drones. Anyone who goes out on the limb in the mainstream media gets terminated faster than you can say Phil Donahue. And
Jeff Cohn, let me just go back to, there's a word that you mentioned of everything you just said, and that was the word defense. We have a Department of Defense. We used to have a Department of War, which was a lot more accurate. But according to the dominant narrative, have lots of enemies out there, from guys just doing individual terrorist acts to nations like China and provocative, that's the big word we hear these days, provocative nations like North Korea and Iran. So a country like ours that could be a target because of envy and resentment and hatred of democracy and hatred of Christianity and all that is needs defense. That I think that would be the prevailing argument.
Yeah, that is the prevailing argument. And what's interesting is if you look at the documentation from people who've been inside the so-called defense establishment, it's not really what they're about. It's not really what American war policy or U.S. military policy is about. U.S. military policy is about protecting corporate profits overseas. They've admitted it in documents that have been released ever since, say, the 1930s and 1940s. They can make that argument. My friend, the former CIA official John Stockwell, he left the CIA in the 1970s after being a very high-level CIA officer, and he titled his book, where he blew the whistle on what the CIA does and what U.S. military policy is about, his book was called In Search of Enemies, that the United States needs enemies, will always have enemies. As soon as one group of enemies, either recedes or collapses, we'll find new enemies. In my book about my experiences in cable news, which I called Cable News Confidential, I talk about this incident right after the Cold War ended, because the Soviet Union and its empire had collapsed, and one country after another, communist country in Europe, had collapsed. And there was this fear on the part of the military-industrial complex, which needs an enemy. How are they going to justify their huge profits and their huge federal contracts that taxpayers pay for? And Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. We're talking 1980, and it led to the war. 1990, and it led to the war in 1991. And at this giant conference in Wisconsin of military contractors, a guy called the conference to order, and his first words were, "Thank you, Saddam Hussein."
Wow!
And the whole place erupted in applause. So, I mean, the reality is, Peter, in answer to your question, is the U.S. military-industrial complex is so powerful that they will create enemies, they will provoke enemies, there will always be an enemy. It's unfortunately, you know, one of the few crops that the U.S. produces is war, you know, and military industries. But the idea that the, you accurately pointed out that the Department of Defense used to be called the Department of War. It changed from the Department of War to the Department of Defense around the same time that George Orwell was writing his novel 1984. And we really have an aggressive foreign policy. You know, there's probably sports fans, Peter, in your audience. They should ask themselves during the Super Bowl, at the beginning when it's announced. This game is being watched by American troops all over the world in 128 countries, you know, whatever it is, 116. You know, why do we have troops in all of those countries?
Well, I think it is summed up nicely in that phrase which you mentioned from Dwight Eisenhower, the military-industrial complex. My guest, Jeff Cohn, among other things, he co-founded RootsAction.org. We're going to talk a little about that in a while. You're listening to The Peter Werbe Show. And what you said about Saddam Hussein and the continuance of military spending after the collapse of the Soviet Union, as you know, after World War II, there was great fear that we would return to depression because it was the Keynesian spending for war that actually got the U.S. finally out of the depression of the 1930s. And if there was no longer a need for great expenditure, what were we going to do? Well, the Soviet Union, which wanted all, and this has come out in everything that has been released since the collapse of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union, Stalin, and they just wanted peace, cooperation. I mean, it was a brutal dictatorship that wanted to control Eastern Europe for sure. But it was the selection of the Soviet Union as the next enemy to justify the expenditures that you're speaking about.
Yes. Yeah. And that's always happened, though. You know, for decades we had the Cold War against communism. Communism virtually disappeared, certainly from Europe. And they had to create a new enemy, and that became Saddam Hussein. And with Saddam Hussein,
and terrorism.
Was, yeah, now it's terrorism. There will always be an enemy. We have the most powerful corporations in the world are some of these U.S. military corporations. It, you know, this problem of militarism, as I said in the column in Common Dreams yesterday, it explains why other industrialized countries have things like universal health care and free college education. But we don't. And, you know, if we continue to divert the resources of our very, very wealthy society into military campaigns, interventions, wars, military equipment, stationing troops in more than 100 countries, then we won't have these things that the American people, the working class, the middle class, are so beleaguered in recent years, and yet we're putting all this money down the drain of the military. And, you know, it isn't the best Keynesian spending.
No.
You know, every study has shown that if you want to lift up the working class and middle class, the worst way to do it is to invest in military. The best way to do it is to invest in schools and structures and bridges and sanitation and environment. That distributes jobs a lot better than military.
Jeff Cohn, let's go on to the Nobel Peace Prize. It was granted a few years ago to Barack Obama, and an unlikely nominee, one would think, given conventional thinking, would be Bradley Manning, the young soldier who is now being tried on very serious charges for releasing all these government documents to to WikiLeaks. Let's go first with Barack Obama, because one usually, at least the conservative thought, is that that anyone to the left of Mussolini will be defending Barack Obama no matter what he does. And
right.
It's certainly not true with you, nor RootsAction.org or any of the other groups that I mentioned that you've been prominent in.
Yes, RootsAction.org was set up largely to show that there are millions of people in this country that get their information from places like Peter Werbe's radio shows or Democracy Now! Or Common Dreams and Truth Out and Truth Dig, those kinds of websites. And they understand that the problems in our country are not just right-wing whack job Republicans who don't believe in science or global warming or, you know, there's also a problem known as corporatist Democrats. In fact, one could argue the dominant faction in the Democratic Party are corporatists and militarists. So, RootsAction.org was set up to work for issues like civil liberties and human rights and an end to these pointless, needless wars and defense of the working class and the middle class. So by definition, RootsAction.org has been conflicting with Obama on almost all of his policies. The most recent is Obama's efforts to put Social Security on the chopping block. So Social Security has nothing to do with any debt problems we have. Or
deficit, nothing.
Yeah, it's the most popular social program. It's a great program. It's well administered. It's very efficient. And for some reason, Obama, in his constant efforts to placate the right wing, wants to do that. And indeed, Wall Street wants it put on the chopping block as well. So we've been critical of Obama and especially Obama foreign policy. He got this Nobel Peace Prize years ago, basically because he was not Bush. He's done very little in the succeeding years to justify his receiving the Nobel Prize. He's expanded the war in Afghanistan. He expanded drone strikes. People that have blown the whistle on militarism and U.S. intervention overseas have been prosecuted by this administration. More whistleblowers have been prosecuted by the Obama administration than all previous presidents in history. So clearly, I believe the, you know, Norwegian Nobel Committee that gave him the prize has suffered a lot of criticism for it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the wake of that, a number of parliamentarians from places like Iceland, a member of the former member of the cabinet in Tunisia, they've nominated Bradley Manning to get this year's Nobel Peace Prize.
And remind us about Bradley Manning.
Yeah, Bradley Manning, when he was about 22, was a U.S. Army intelligence analyst, very low level. But he came across on the computer incredible amounts of documentation showing that the U.S. military and the U.S. State Department had been engaging in wholesale lying to the American public, that the U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan kept saying they weren't keeping track of civilian deaths. In fact, they were. Bradley Manning saw that on his computer screen. He saw this video of U.S. soldiers in an Apache attack helicopter killing some people in Baghdad, including a couple reporters from Reuters, and then some civilians who went to aid the original civilians who were killed. And on the videotape, Bradley Manning sees that the soldiers in the attack helicopter are basically laughing at the death and destruction. He found that there was an official U.S. policy in Iraq that the U.S. Army knew that our Iraqi allies were routinely, regularly, daily engaging in torture, and the U.S. Had an order that U.S. soldiers who saw that should look away and not report it. That's, of course, a war crime. And then he had these U.S. State Department cables that showed in country after country, the U.S. State Department was intervening in democratic countries, intervening within the judiciary systems of other countries, including countries like Germany, like Spain, where those countries were trying to prosecute U.S. CIA agents who had engaged in kidnapping and torture of Spanish citizens, of German citizens, that the U.S. State Department under Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama was pressuring the judiciaries of those democratic countries not to engage in prosecutions. So, I mean, what Bradley Manning gave to WikiLeaks after seeing these documents on his computer screen was current documents showing that the U.S. war on terror, what is called the U.S. war on terror in our media, is experienced in other countries as a U.S. war of terror.
Mm-hmm.
That innocent civilians are dying, innocent civilians are being kidnapped. Bradley Manning's documentation that he gave to WikiLeaks and then was revealed to the whole world showed that an innocent grocer in Germany who had a name similar to that of a terrorist, while he's on vacation, he's kidnapped by U.S. CIA agents, sent to a country to be tortured for years, and then they realize, oh, we've got the wrong guy.
What?
Now, if some other country was coming into the U.S. and kidnapping citizens here, oh, it's the wrong guy, having them tortured for years, we would expect our government to go and prosecute those terrorists, those kidnappers, those torturers. Well, when Germany was doing it, Bradley Manning, the U.S. Army whistleblower, and the documents he gave to WikiLeaks reveals that the Obama and Hillary Clinton State Department were trying to intervene, and apparently successfully, to get Germany not to prosecute those CIA officers who engaged in that torture. So we've got the best look at what the U.S. government does overseas in the name of the American public, thanks to this whistleblower.
Any chance that Bradley Manning would actually receive it? I tend to doubt it, because if you think about it, you think that it's inappropriate for Barack Obama to have received it. Think about it. They gave it to Henry Kissinger, who is an authentic war criminal and on any number of grounds and can't even travel to lots of countries or he'd be arrested.
Right. Well, the fact is, yeah, they gave it to Kissinger for negotiating a peace treaty after he'd escalated war and committed all sorts of war crimes. They gave it to Obama when he had no record. You know, he was basically making some speeches, and they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize. It's obviously a long shot that this guy, Bradley Manning, who may very well spend the rest of his life, he's only 25 years old, he may spend the rest of his life in a U.S. prison. It's highly unlikely, but we're delivering. In a matter of days, RootsAction.org has accumulated about 35,000, 40,000 signatures. When groups overseas start this petition, we could end up delivering a quarter million signatures to the Nobel Peace Prize Committee. And the reason we wanted to start in the United States is we wanted the Nobel Peace Prize Committee to see that while Bradley Manning is behind bars for revealing the truth of U.S. war crimes overseas, that many Americans, many U.S. citizens consider him a hero. Daniel Ellsberg, who was the whistleblower of the Pentagon Papers in 1971 during the Vietnam War era, he calls Bradley Manning a hero, as do many of us.
Well, in fact, we're running quickly out of time. Yeah. Let me just raise this, whereas people on the left may consider, and it's odd that it's kind of comes down to those political definitions, but people on the left consider Bradley Manning a hero because it begins to tell us what we need to know to evaluate in a democratic manner our nation's foreign policy. On the other hand, the right wing considers him a traitor. I think he's still facing the Espionage Act.
Yes.
Yeah, which is from World War I and pretty serious biz.
Well, but see, I think there's some on the right wing that may consider him a traitor, but there's many on the libertarian right that think he's a hero.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's often groups on the right wing that think the military interventionism of the U.S. has reached pathological proportions. So, you know, for us at Roots Action, we don't talk left, right, center. You know, this young man knew he was risking his life. He saw that the U.S. government, Bush and Obama, had lied about what was happening in Iraq and Afghanistan and in many other countries across the globe. He revealed the documents because he wanted to generate debate. We know that from the chats he had online with a guy who turned him in. We know what Bradley Manning's motivation was. On one of those chats, he said, hey, I could have given these documents to the Russians or Chinese and gotten rich.
Mm-hmm.
And the informant says, why didn't you? And Bradley Manning says, because this should generate debate. I want this in the public domain.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. So
Bradley
Manning
for Nobel Peace Prize. Let's get this in. I know you won't object to me interrupting you, because I want to just talk a little about RootsAction.org. The concern about the dominant corporate media, the concern about the Democratic Party, it almost gives the little people, you, me, the rest of us listening, the idea of that old phrase of tilting at windmills. These are the major institutions of our society, and neither of them are oriented towards actual solutions or confronting the problems that average people face and need to solve. So is there a chance? Can Roots Action take on the Democratic Party? Can RootsAction.org take on the corporate media?
Well, we've been doing it. You know, we've been bringing out stories that no one's heard of. Bradley Manning for the Nobel Peace Prize was something we started about a week and a half ago, and it's gone all over the internet internationally. And, you know, I'm sure there's some people that got our Bradley Manning deserves the Nobel Peace Prize email in their, you know, email inbox, had never heard of Bradley Manning. He's not exactly covered much in the mainstream media, which used to value whistleblowers, but doesn't anymore. So, yeah, there's no doubt we're taking on some of the big players, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, both the U.S. corporate mainstream media. But, you know, we've already grown to 250,000 members, RootsAction.org. We're exclusively online for now. But we've been challenging Obama's efforts to put Medicare and Social Security on the chopping block. We've been doing that month after month after month. So it's no surprise to our members that because of his close alliances with Wall Street, and remember, Wall Street wants Social Security privatized so they can enhance their profits. We've been putting that issue on the table for months. So if people want to go and join up with what we're trying to do to challenge the two-party system and to spread the word where the mainstream media is suppressing the word, they should just go to RootsAction.org, and in the upper right you can put your email and you'll start getting our messages.
Well, thank you so much, and I know you've got another interview in 5 minutes, so yeah. Thank you for taking the time. I guess it's been Jeff Cohn. He's the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. That's fair.org. He co-founded RootsAction.org, and we've reached him at his office at Ithaca College, where he's an associate professor of journalism. Thanks for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter. Always a pleasure.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Ever hear somebody say we can do this the easy way or we can do it the hard way? I mean, what kind of a choice is that? At Geico.com, everything's easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance. Easy to go paperless by automatically paying your bid online. Easy, easy, easy. So visit Geico.com today. Of course, if you prefer the hard way, I guess you'll have to go someplace else. Sorry, I just don't get it.
Jim Twitchell's a senior master technician at Ford, and once he starts talking brakes, there's no stopping it.
Brakes are the most important system on your car as far as I'm concerned. And when we do an inspection, we check the pads and shoes for thicknesses, we check the rotors and drums.
Get Motorcraft Brake Service with up to $50 in mail-in rebates when you use the Ford Service credit card. Click on the banner ad now. Taxes extra. Rebate by check subject to credit approval. Pads or shoes on most cars and light trucks. One axle. Excludes machining, rotors, or drums. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details through 531-13.
Wash her, paint her face on.
back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Have you heard the phrase, I'm sure you have, from way back when, save the whales? And you know, that was pretty serious. The whales are still under assault. Groups like the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, who I've interviewed any number of times, are out there again trying to stop the Japanese from killing whales. And so that's a slogan that speaks to our hearts. There's something about whales that does stuff for us. But what about us? What about the human beings? We're not in such good shape. We've hit about 7 billion people. Lots of indications we're not doing well as a species, and we're doing harm to other species. And usually we think about that, you know, save this species. And, well, we shouldn't. We should pay attention to that. We're all part of the same fabric. But we got to take care of ourselves as well. And if you look around the planet, there's a job to be done. We're fortunate to have people like Jeremy Bracker. He's an author who, over the course of the last half century, has participated in movements for nuclear disarmament, civil rights, peace in Vietnam, international labor rights, global economic justice, accountability for war crimes, climate protection, and many others. If you go way, way, way back with these broadcasts, you may remember when I interviewed him about his book, Strike. He's also written a number of books, a dozen books on labor and social movements. And this I did not know about him, that he has a PhD from the Union Graduate School and has received 5 regional Emmy Awards for his documentary film work. We're reaching him at his home in West Cornwall, Connecticut. And although it's been a long time, Jeremy Brecker, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, it's great to be back, and it's great to connect with you again, Peter.
It's funny. We never let anybody go. So, as I said, welcome back. And I should have said, there's a couple of things about your title that throws one first. And it says, Save the Humans, and it says, Common Preservation in Action. We'll get to the subtitle a little later. But it doesn't say, like, Save the Whales, big exclamation mark. It says, Save the Humans with a question mark. Why the question mark?
Well, the question mark really is, you know, there was a famous cartoon with people watching whales and carrying signs saying, save the whales. And one whale is turning to the other and saying, yes, but can they save themselves? And I think that really is the question that we're facing between global warming and the continuing threats of military conflict and the catastrophic condition of the global economy. We really are looking at, I think many people feel this somewhere in their hearts. It's not something we really like to say out loud, but I mean, many of us feel in our hearts, you know, are we facing doom?
Well, that's interesting. Go ahead.
Now, just, I think this is a kind of humorous way to surface the question and begin the conversation about what really can we be doing about the problems that we're kind of despair even of talking about and thinking about.
Well, in a way, Jeremy Brecker, you took away a question by what you said, because in our hearts, I think, because a lot on the surface, there's any number of people could say, you got another one of these Chicken Little guys on the air. The sky's not falling. I got a home. I got a car. I got a job. I'm not in a war. You know, I'm healthy. I doubt if I'm sucking up too much pollution. I think you're right. I think lurking beneath the surface in all, everyone other than probably the most unaware person, who I don't think would be listening to this program, there's a palpable fear about the future, isn't there?
I think that's really true, and I think, you know, denial and pretending things aren't there really is a natural response people have to something they can't do anything about. But it's also a loser of a response, because then you know you're not going to be able to do anything about it. And what we really need to do is to begin talking about it in a serious way, and a way that can allow us to begin asking those questions of, well, what can we be doing about this?
Well, I think up until just recently, that people thought, how can I affect anything? I'm a solitary individual. I hardly know anybody, even in my subdivision. And this world is controlled by elites and also subject to forces way beyond my control, which is part of the same deal. But suddenly, even on the right, you know, you see people organizing. But now, on a more progressive end, we have the Occupy movement. And your book, Save the Humans, Common Preservation in Action, I assume was written way before the Occupy movement began.
I've been working on it for about 40 years, and it was went off to press just before the Occupy movement broke out. But, you know, you could see some of the signs beforehand. You could see the great kind of rising in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the Middle West. You could see the rising in Egypt and Tunisia and the Middle East. You could see some of the things that indicated that maybe this isolation wasn't permanent. Maybe this sense of powerlessness wasn't inevitable. And the book was very much written looking forward to possibilities like what we've seen in the last year. In fact, the prologue to the book begins with, why are orders for pizza arriving from Cairo, Egypt, in the Capitol Rotunda in Wisconsin? I think that the book was written very much as a way of providing all the understanding and historical experience that I could provide for the kinds of people who are making the Occupy movements and making the movement against the Keystone XL pipeline and for climate protection to provide the things that they would be able to use in terms of historical experience.
But wait a minute, go back to the pizza thing. I mean, I know what you're talking about. I'm not sure everyone else does. You're saying, wait a minute, the big labor mobilizations in Madison earlier last year, right? Almost a year ago. And
right.
Pizzas, Cairo, what's going on here?
Well, there were mobilization in Madison, Wisconsin, and there were similar ones in other Midwestern states, happened right after the Great Tahrir Square occupations in Egypt. And people began pointing out the similarities of the two and pointing out that some of the feeling that you really could affect things like Wisconsin Governor Walker's attacks both on labor and on the environment, that ordinary citizens could affect those things, was really stimulated by the so-called Arab Spring, the upheavals in Egypt and Tunisia. And a symbol of that was the fact that people in Cairo, Egypt, began calling in orders for pizza to be delivered to the rotunda of the state capitol in Wisconsin. By the way, the same thing has been happening with Occupy Wall Street in New York. People from all over the world have been sending orders for pizza and food to be delivered to the Occupy Wall Street folks while they were occupying Zuccotti Park in New York.
Yeah, I know.
Including a lot from Egypt.
I think they did a lot for the economy. There were so many pizzas ordered that people wanted to show their support. My guest on the Peter Werby Show is Jeremy Brecker. He's written Save the Humans, Common Preservation in Action. It's from Paradigm Publishers, which is ParadigmPublishers.com. And Jeremy's website is Jeremy Brecher. That's BRECHER.org. And I'll have a link on my website as well. Tell us what the subtitle of Save the Humans means. Common Preservation in Action. What does that mean? I know what preservation and, well, actually explain the whole thing.
Well, you know, people talk about self-preservation, and self-preservation is the law of life, and people will do anything for self-preservation, and there's some genuine truth in that. But often, and you can really see it today, we find ourselves in situations where just pursuing our own self-preservation is a dead end. Instead of solving our problems, we try to solve our problems individually, and the result is our problems just get worse and worse, and we get a situation where we can't cooperate with other people, even though that's really the only way to survive. And so I use the idea of common preservation as what we really need to do in situations like this global warming situation where we're facing devastating climate change, and yet each country says, well, we won't do anything about this because we might be at an economic disadvantage to some other country. Well, the obvious solution is to say, let's make a deal and all provide for our common preservation, our common security, because everyone's so involved in their own self-preservation, they can't realize that only through common preservation can we realize self-preservation. So that's the core idea of it.
Okay, I think we still, and you do it very well in your book, Save the Humans, have to, you know, a bad verb probably. Well, I was going to say sell people. Convince people that actually that they themselves, right now an isolated individual, has social, political, economic power, rather than just being objects to be moved around by elites and are just subject to whatever they deal out. I wonder, because in your book, Save the Humans, you mention a number of movements throughout history, some not so long ago, some that you participated in, and I have as well. Because the American Revolution, which had a lot of importance, it was pretty much initiated by elites. But there's other movements throughout history where it was the common man and woman that moved history forward, and then the elites were, of course, running around, you know, trying to, let me get up in front of this. But give us some examples of how things went from, like the Occupy movement, went from 0 to 100, that could be used as a model.
Well, I don't think there's any one model, but as you say, the main way that I try to help people get the idea that they can respond and that they do have power when they come together was trying to use historical examples. And there are lots and lots of them in the book. I think, by the way, I disagree a little bit about the American Revolution. The elites certainly were involved, but there was also, from the beginning, a very, very important role for popular mobilization by sailors, by urban residents, by farmers. There were even slaves who were active participants in the revolutionary movement who certainly aren't part of the elite.
Sure, no, I agree. So, I do agree that it was both. I mean,
yeah.
when we think of the people, we solely, in fact, that's one of the hidden histories that people like yourself, Peter Linebaugh, other people like that have chronicled. But let's go on with an example.
That's one of our examples. I think one of the ones that's least understood and appreciated these days is the role of the labor movement. We're used to institutionalized trade unions that go into collective bargaining every 3 years. But in fact, the reason that there's any kind of restraint on corporations in our country is largely the result of waves of what I call mass strikes that have occurred repeatedly in American history, going back to the 1870s and again in the 1880s and 90s, and very much in the era of the Great Depression, and then often I recognize that in the Vietnam War era, there were huge strikes, often by workers organizing themselves, sometimes with unions, sometimes without unions. But these have all played a major role in putting a degree of of restraint on the free operation of corporations.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned labor because there's an interesting conversation going on, as you know. One of the conversations initiated by Detroiter Grace Lee Boggs, who says that as much as she's always supported the labor movement, there's so little left of it in the manner that there was from the 1870s that you chronicle in Save the Humans, the great period of labor unrest in the 1930s, and that today we have the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies, organizing baristas at Starbucks, and all power to them, and well they should organize, but it's not like they play a key role in the economy any longer, or do they? And is there a potential for labor in the coming period?
Well, I think the first thing to note is that working people have always had to reinvent the labor movement. For example, the labor movement that developed in the Great Depression of the 1930s was wildly different from the labor movement that had preceded it. They really had to make a whole new kind of labor movement that could deal with the huge auto factories, that could take advantage of the concentration of workers and working class institutions in cities like Detroit, and at the same time could take on the huge power that corporations like the auto corporations represented. And we really have to reinvent the labor movement in the same way today to deal with the decline of steady work and the rise of contingent work, to deal with the globalization of the corporations and the many other changes in the conditions we face. So I think we have to look forward to creating a new kind of labor movement. But if we do that, I think we still have a situation where, as the old Wobbly song said, without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn.
Sure.
And I think that the core power of working people remains a central feature of society. And we should also note that all of the upheavals of the last year, from Tunisia to Egypt to Spain and to Occupy Wall Street and the parallel movements all over the country, in all of these, organized labor has played a very, very important role. The Occupy movements and the other movements have also played a very important role in giving labor a wake-up call and saying the business as usual is not an effective way to deal with the problems that the 99% are facing. And Occupy Wall Street represents in some ways the beginning of a different kind of movement of working people. Can you imagine people starting to hold general assemblies in their workplaces and just saying, I'm sorry, we can't work right now. We have some important business to attend to. Well, it may not be at hand. People will be very afraid, but you could see a situation arising where people say, this is more important. This is something that we're going to do. And I'm not saying that that's the form it will take, but that's the kind of change in the way that working people need to deal with their conditions that we face. And also the way in which Occupy Wall Street can be and actually already is an inspiration to working people in many different spheres of life to begin thinking, well, what is this new thing that we need to develop in order to get some power over our situation?
You know, it's interesting when you're referring to Occupy Wall Street and the whole Occupy movement. You talked about the beginning of the movement. I think a lot of people, particularly folks that get their information just through the corporate media, that it almost looks like it's gone. I mean, it was this a bigger flash in the pan than the Tea Party movement, which appears to be pretty, you know, it has some manifestation still, but not the way it dominated the news a couple of years ago. So Occupy was big in over 1,000 cities, and suddenly I'll bet you there's not one person in 100 listening that hears any more about it. So, but it's still afoot, is it?
Very definitely. I'll just give you two quick examples. In Des Moines, Iowa, where the Republican caucuses were held yesterday, they had a very, very active Occupy the Caucus movement, which held demonstrations and sit-ins at the headquarters of most of the Republican candidates for the Republican presidential nomination. They held their own People's Caucus, where they chose, they had a competition to choose the candidates that they most dispreferred. They, above all, focused on the banks and financial institutions and their role in controlling and manipulating the candidates. And they also built a huge oil pipeline, probably out of, I don't know, paper mache or whatever, and they ran it directly from one of the caucus sites to a one of the global banks, which was a block or two away.
You know, Jeremy, Willard Romney, whose nickname is Mitt, and you know why his nickname is Mitt, right? If you look at your right hand and look, that's the mitten of Michigan, where you know, that's true. And but he said there was some people from Occupy the Caucuses chanting, and he said, "Well, I hope they would do the same thing if Barack Obama was here," and they would, wouldn't they?
Not only would they, but they in fact did do an action at the Obama actually set up a kind of headquarters in Iowa, and they did do an action at it, and exactly for that reason. I think one of the reasons that there has been such a good response and will be a very strong response in support of the Occupy movements as the election gets going is because they will call attention to the power of the corporations and especially the financial institutions over both parties. And they don't have to say that there's no difference. They don't have to say, you know, Obama is the same as Michelle Bachmann, which I don't think is either valid or wise. Yes, there is a difference, but both parties and the candidates of both parties are overwhelmingly dominated by the power of corporations and especially the financial corporations.
Jeremy Brecker, we are just out of time. We got about 1 minute, and your book, Save the Humans, Common Preservation in Action, isn't just a complaint at all. In fact, very little of it is a complaint. It points out what's wrong, but it's mostly devoted, partly autobiographical, but also problem solving. The problem being are what you enunciated at the beginning of this, the environment, the economy, the relationship of power, the domination of money in our culture. 30 seconds. What do we do? Then we get people to read the book, because this is where it's all at, in Save the Humans. But what's the general outline for saving us humans? What's common preservation in action? How does that manifest itself?
Well, I think the takeoff point now is that Occupy Wall Street is spawning a much, much bigger movement of people who don't sleep in parks, but recognize that we have to have a struggle for the interests of the 99%. And that means not only the 99% in the United States, but the global 99%. And that means restoring or creating democracy worldwide. It means empowering all the people who are excluded from control over the major corporate and governmental institutions. And that means, after all, Occupy Wall Street and the global Occupy movements have been global movements. They've now even reached Russia. There are little echoes even in China. And we need to make that a global movement of the global 99%. And that means not just dealing with the power of corporations over people's paychecks and bank accounts, although that's very, very important, but the power they have over the air we breathe and the climate that we live in, and whether we get sent off to war, and that broad set of crucial questions for our future are really something that we can participate in right in our home communities, the way the Occupy movement spread to over 1,000 communities. We can do that, and we can do it worldwide.
And I think not only can we, but it's an imperative. Richard Falk, who's a University of California at Santa Barbara professor, said, with species survival at stake that includes us, what Jeremy Brecker writes is at once frightening but also inspiring. Jeremy Brecker, thanks for rejoining us. I promise you I won't let decades go by again before we have you back on the Peter Werbe Show. The book is Save the Humans, Common Preservation in Action. It's published by Paradigm Publishers. They're at paradigmpublishers.com. Jeremy Brecker's website, just put .org after it. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Thanks for being on the broadcast.
Thanks so much, Peter. It's great to be back in touch.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Ever hear somebody say, we can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way? I mean, what kind of a choice is that? At Geico.com, everything's easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance. Easy to go paperless by automatically paying your bid online. Easy, easy, easy. So visit Geico.com today. Of course, if you prefer the hard way, I guess you'll have to go someplace else. Sorry, I just don't get it.
Drive me home. I had to carry.
Saying that opinions are like, a certain unsanitary part of the body.
Ew.
But the riff disagrees. Yes, friend, your opinion is like a beautiful fledgling bird.
I'm a peacock! You gotta let me fly!
And since WRIF cares, we give you the Riff Daily Web Poll, because voicing your opinion is your job. Our job is making it suck less.
Well, good luck fixing America.
The Riff Daily Web Poll, brought to you by Parkway Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Vote now at WRIF.com.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
The 2013 Riff Rock Girl Search continues. Cast your vote for the Exotic 8 right now at WRIF.com. Now, more Riff Rock. 101
WRIF.
Everything that rocks.